Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc. Hello.
Hey.
Hello,
doctor.
Okay, gentlemen, let's all take a moment of silence and just be quiet for 45 seconds. Destino, I know that's going to be very hard for you, but 45 seconds. Just,
I know it's difficult. I choke every time I got a hold. Keep quiet.
Hey, well, I'll listen to Silencio. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Also, Sports and Depth of the show. As you open every show with a prayer. John Coltrane, Dear Lord, as apropos title, Dear Lord, thank you for another day, another Sunday. Palm Sunday, Hosanna, and the Sunday prior to the cross, no cross nor us. Thank you for the little things that we so largely take for granted. Bless our families, our friends, and my families in Brazil, as well as in Nueva York and Virginia. We thank you, dear Lord, as we go to the season of Lent. Blessings unseen, undeserved, unmerited. In your holy name, dear Lord, we thank you for all things. And ask these blessings in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus. Amen. And Palm Sunday today, and yeah, I went to church, and you know, you just really can't comprehend the love and grace of God. You just really can't. I mean, just the fact that He came from heaven. I mean, you know, you pick the greatest lifestyle you could have on this earth and multiply it by 2 zillion, and you remotely don't come close to what it's like to be in heaven. But then and then today, you know, the pastor the many things, we realize how on today, riding into town, there's a big parade, Hosanna, Hosanna, and before the week is out, they're nailing them. Friday night, you know, we look at the Good Friday, and then the whole, you know, he talked about the difference in the concept of the punishment that was administered to Christ. You know, it's some things that were just really amazing, and you just really can't even comprehend the guys in history of the Bible. But the fact that Christ was crucified was the most severe of all types of deaths you could have. And then the fact that he was nailed even enhanced the process of which he was killed, because the average person was just tied on the cross. And in his case, where are we getting that static from? Big C? Hello?
Hello?
I hear it.
Okay.
Yeah, I can hear it too.
Is that Mrs. Page?
This is Patricia Page.
This is okay, Mrs. Patricia Page. Whoa. Gentlemen, this
welcome.
Gentlemen, this is Doc Stanley. Let me handle this first, gentlemen.
I feel totally humbled to be on your show, honestly, and especially to follow a talk about Palm Sunday, because I also attend the Palm Sunday services today.
Well, you know,
and it was the first time I've been in church in quite a while, and it was an awesome experience.
Well, you know, we are delighted to have you. We're looking forward to have you last week. Destino Lois, who is a former world prize fighter himself and a lieutenant in the New York Fire Department, and Mel Smith Jr., former WWF star, are looking to get a hold of Harold West and some other people, and my control man, Charlie. So we are the ones that are humble and honored. But, you know, the Palm Sunday thing, and, you know, people talk about how people can turn on you, but, I mean, you know, they are saluting him on Sunday, Hosanna, which means free us now, and before the
Absolutely.
Week is out, know, and before the week is out, I mean, and crucifixion was a simple thing of tying. They nailed him to the cross, and it was the most severe. I mean, the term, there really was no term to describe the pain that he went through. I mean, you talk about excruciating. That was a term derived from the pain inflicted upon Christ on the cross, because the Romans had what they called electors, and their specialty was to inflict pain, body, neck, the body, neck, and leg so severe that it took you to the brink of death, that when death came, it was like, hey, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he did it all to save us from sin.
Yep.
And to give us life ever after.
I mean, he didn't do a thing. You know, Jesus paid it all. You know, Jesus paid all.
That is the absolute sacrifice.
Yep. You just that great biblical quote: "Greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends." And even to the point of, you know, because Christ was tried from both sides, the Jews because of blasphemy, and the Romans because of insurrection, and then the Jews like backed off and let the Romans handle the penalty, because from a Jewish standpoint of view, he could have been stoned, he could have been allowed to lay down, and his shirt would have stayed on. With the Romans, stand up erect, no shirt off, and we know, as they say, the rest is history. But you know, when you kind of get upset when friends and family turn your back on you, well. Look at Christ. I mean, that Sunday, today, he's riding in town. He's the man. Hosanna, free us now. In less than a week, you know, they're
everybody turned against him.
Yep, everybody turned against him. So,
Doc
Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network. Well, our special guest is here. Charlie, we're going to let Larry Hardesty, the greatest academic sportscaster in history of New York City Radio, bring us on. And then, Sports in Depth, we'll have the lovely Mrs. Page and crew talking a host of things. Charlie, let Larry Hardesty in, please.
Absolutely.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake. Great to know, Rainbow Souls and Sports Network. The show, Big C, one more time. Let everyone know how they can download, how they can catch us, and all the other particulars they need to know that only the wizard, Big C, can divulge.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doc. Well, please to follow us. Log on to BlakeRadio.com. Follow the prompt to Rainbow Soul. That'll take you right to the options that our show has. You can listen to our current show, and you can listen to any past shows. Also, if you're on the go, you can download the Stitcher app, which allows you to take our show on the road with you. The Stitcher app works on any smart-enabled device, works on your iPhone, on your Android, your BlackBerry, and your Palm. Thanks.
If you want to listen, you can always dial the call-in number and not hit for the host and listen in too. Well, and there was something, I think it's Cutter Howe, and Destino, you talked about it, and
yes.
And I think the guys that handles this, we're going to talk boxing, the question, but you know, we're looking, you know, Mrs. Page is sort of irate in the same thing that ticked you, to find that in the Boxing Hall of Fame, they're going
right.
to put in not only a fake fighter, but not even a good fake fighter.
Not even a good fake fighter.
A celluloid king.
And when you talk about Great Page, you're talking about the guy who was the number one amateur in the world,
exactly.
One of only four heavyweight champions to come out of Louisville, the guy who was carrying boxing, the guy who was seen in a lot of ways as a second Ali. I mean, you know, there are a lot of guys who never, ever became the heavyweight champion of the world.
Right.
But I want you to, you got Mrs. Page, I want you to start, and not only that, I mean, the boxing, I remember in the initial setup of the induction into the Boxing Hall of Fame, which I was one of the original voters, and it was a situation where they would send us a ballot every year, and you would pick a host of names, I know a year or two passed, and I didn't get a ballot. And I was like, whoa. So I called Ed Brophy. I said, Ed, you know, hey, Doc, Ed, I haven't been getting the ballot. He said, oh, no, Doc, if you know, we get the names from the Boxing Writers of America, and if you're not a member of the Boxing Writers of America, then you know I'm part of the inception. I'm part of the ground floor. This now you telling me now that after all this time, I can't vote anymore because I'm no longer a member of the Boxing Writers of America.
That's how they monopolize it.
It was the thing that came, you know, and I left the Boxing Writers of America for a host of reasons, and now this, the thing with Mrs. Page alludes to, even validates my move. You know, originally, there's some things happened with the former president. Then there was a situation that I found ludicrous, that the Boxing Writers of America had never found any way, shape, or form to honor Don King. Are you serious?
Wow.
I mean, how could you not find some way to honor the greatest promoter that ever lived? How could you find something? This is the only guy you go to the press conference and gives you a hot meal. Everybody else is giving you croissants and sandwiches. But I mean, this is the greatest.
No matter what you would think about Don King, and a lot of people think, you know, there are people who think yes, they like him or they don't. He is boxing.
Yeah,
you know, and there is absolutely no way not to honor Don King in the Boxing Hall of Fame.
That's absolutely
ludicrous.
Well, I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame, but I'm talking the boxing writers here in New York City. I mean,
and that's even crazy.
I know. I mean, and I was at affairs where the guy said they would never, ever, ever. And then the next week, they're sitting at the Don King press conference. I mean, it's that, the thing
that's
with Chris Thorne.
The ultimate of hypocrisy. That's what it is.
And then what I found ludicrous too is that you had these wholesome magazines run by a horde of people, and yet nobody ever asked a minority writer to write in one of the magazines. You know, all the minority writers were guys from white publications. I mean, I remember one guy told me, the PR guy at Madison Square Garden. I said, you have these little stories, and how come you never? Well, you know, Mel, I feel embarrassed to only be able to offer you $50. I'm thinking, well, you're not embarrassed to offer it to Michael Katz or Wally Matthews, so why are you embarrassed to offer it to me? But it's strange. But Dusty, the thing that she has alluded to, the thing that she has talked about, the thing that we have talked about, the perpetrating of a fraud, as Marion Boyko would say, of the Boxing Hall of Fame. And you know, they just wouldn't even consider putting Greg Page. But Mrs. Page, ladies first, you know, just tell us the whole story. Start us off here. You know, you talked about the situation, you know, when the belts, he had his belts. Just, the platform is yours. Speak to us.
Okay. You may be sorry you said that, but that's okay. First of all, call me Patricia. I don't call myself Mrs. Page. I'm Patricia. That's all I've ever been known as, and that's great. But a little bit of background. First of all, before we get started, I have to give a shout-out to Stephen Stein up in Hillside, New Jersey, for helping put us together. Also, the American Association for the Improvement of Boxing in New York, Steve Acunto. I've done a lot of work with him.
Wow.
The American Association of Professional Ringside Physicians. They're also known as Patty's Crew, because all the work that they did to help me get Greg's case ready to go to court against the state of Kentucky, which I'll go into that in just a second. And also to my friend named Lou up in Brooklyn. Now, I got that all taken care of, so if I missed anybody, I'm sorry, guys. I love you all. I have a lot of friends up there. But the story about Greg Page is that he went into a fight in Erlanger, Kentucky. The athletic commission at that time, the director of the athletic commission at that time, and his name is Jack Kern. He and the promoter of the particular fight were friends. And so he allowed him to cut any corner that he could. And unfortunately, those corners were, the doctor was not licensed to practice in the state of Kentucky. He was on probation in Ohio, where he did have a license to practice.
Wow.
There was not an ambulance at the fight. And none of these things I knew, obviously. I went there as Greg's girlfriend, whatever, his fiance. I didn't know anything about the rules of boxing. I just knew the sport.
Right.
They didn't have oxygen available at ringside. So in the 10th round, Greg went down with 10 seconds left of the 10th round. They traded a flurry of blows in the middle of the ring. Dale, his opponent, pushed him off of him. Greg fell back against the ropes. His behind landed on the second rope, and he slunk down. He tried to get back up, and he fell back down to the floor. And he said, "Take my gloves off," and that was the last thing that he said. They couldn't find the doctor. Greg and I had a friend who was there, who was a City of Louisville police detective, who found the doctor sneaking out of the building because he didn't have a license to be there, and he was sneaking out of the building. He was drugged back into the ring. By that time, we had Greg stretched out on the floor. We're all talking to him. He has some frothy stuff in his, and his eyes were glazed, and you could tell nobody was getting through to him. The doctor's only thing was to put an ammonia capsule under his nose and walk back out of the ring. Ammonia capsules have been obsolete for quite a while because that irritates the brain.
Absolutely.
So by the time I looked over my shoulder to the athletic director and said, "For God's sakes, Jack, call 911. He needs an ambulance." The first ambulance could not get there because there was not enough security to provide crowd control, and they couldn't get through the crowd.
Wow.
The second ambulance got there. Greg had been laying in the ring in a coma for 45 minutes. So at that time, by the time they got him on the stretcher and headed out of the building, he was what the ambulance team termed a load and go, which meant he's dead. He was in complete cardiac and respiratory arrest and started vomiting blood. When they got him to the hospital, they took him to CAT scan and found out that he had a bleed on his brain and that he needed to go to a trauma center, which was 15 miles away. So they called an ambulance. They had the ambulance meet me at the hospital, pick him up, took him, which went straight into surgery when we got there. Several hours later, the neurosurgeon, Dr. Charles Kuntz from Cincinnati, he went to the University of Cincinnati Hospital, came out and said, "Mrs. Page, I'm afraid to tell you that he's not going to make it through the night. You need to call his family and friends." He said he suffered a major brain bleed. He said, and due to the fact that oxygen was not there to slow the swelling down, it caused three of the major arteries in his brain to clamp off, and he's had a massive stroke. He said he's not going to make it through the night. And I said, "That's okay. Greg's got God in his corner." And I know he thought I was out of my mind. He looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, "Again, he's in critical condition. He's in a coma. You know, if he makes it through tonight, the next 72 hours will be critical." So obviously, you know, I don't want to hear that. But so I started making phone calls. Had to call. I'm here at 1 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm calling people. Collect. You know, Greg's in the hospital. Some of them didn't. His mother didn't even know he had a fight that night. Not the most pleasant calls to have to make, but I did. So when I was able to see him for the first time, anybody that's ever watched Greg fight, Greg was taught, don't get hit if you don't have to.
Yep.
You flip and move. Greg was very slick. Even as a heavyweight, he was very slick at flipping and moving. And that was because he sparred smaller guys who were fast. And as a heavyweight, Greg was very fast. And he could really slip fast. And so he didn't take a lot of shots to the head. So when I first was able to see him, of course, I was horrified. He had tubes and everything coming out of it. But when you looked at his face, the only way you could tell he had been in the fight was because his head was all bandaged up. And they told me at that time that they had removed a palm-sized section of his skull because his brain had swollen that much. They had to give it room for it to continue to swell before it could go back down. But the only way you could tell he had been in the fight is he had bruises on each one of his shoulders, where he always deflected, just how he was trained. So I would go in there. You know, he was in the neurointensive care unit, and I would go in there whenever they would allow me to be in there. I would go in there at nighttime,
give him his bath, talk to him, just like, you know, they just said, just keep talking to him. We don't know what he knows. We don't know if he's ever going to come out of the coma. We don't know. So that was on Saturday morning. Tuesday morning, I woke up. It was raining. and I went in for my 5 o'clock morning visit.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls, and Sports Network Show. The show is dedicated to the memory of the late great heavyweight champion Greg Page, and also that of Ms. Helen Hart, who passed away during the week. And Harold, have you joined us yet, Harold Weston? Harold? Okay, Harold Weston should be joining us.
I'm here.
All right, Harold. Okay, so Harold Weston's here. Harold, this is Mrs. Patty Page. Patty, a former wife of Greg Page. Harold is the first and only African matchmaker in history of Madison Square Garden, former welterweight champion himself. Harold Weston, Deshina Baby Lewis, WF star Mel Smith Jr., all online. And Patty is telling us a story, some history. He's updating us here on a special edition of Sports in Depth. The lovely Patty, continue as we are having you have your say. Gentlemen, she's there for whatever cross-examination you want or questions you have. She's got it for the next 2 hours or whatever she wants. Miss Patty, continue.
Thank you very much. So as I was saying, the doctor said he had made it through the night, the next 72 hours would be critical. Well, on Tuesday morning when I woke up to get ready to go into his room for like my regular 5 o'clock morning visit, it was raining. It was a gloomy day. It was horrible and you know, scared to death. I'm up there scared to death. I go in and I'm, you know, and I'm moving him around the bed and I'm doing things and I'm talking to him, just chit-chatting, and I saw him move. And then his eyes opened up and they were terrified. And his eyes were darting all around the room and I called his name. Mm-hmm. And his eyes followed my voice. Mm-hmm. And when he saw it was me, he immediately calmed down. And I said, Greg, it's going to be okay. I'm here with you. It's going to be okay. So I called the doctors and the nurses in there, and they put me out of the room. And that was when he came out of the coma. But they told me, you know, he's probably going to be a vegetable. You probably need to find a nursing home and put him in. He's never going to get any better than this. And we refused to believe that. So he spent 4 weeks in the hospital in the University of Cincinnati, and then he was transferred back here to Louisville, our hometown, to Fraser Rehab. And he spent 13 weeks in rehab. And he had to learn how to brush his teeth again, put his clothes on again. His left side was totally paralyzed. He could not speak for the first 6 weeks he was down here. He had a trach and was unable to speak. And he gradually got better, got to the point where he was able to go to day rehab, which meant he could come home at nighttime and then go back and be in rehab all during the day. And so he spent roughly a year or more doing that. And then his insurance cut out, and then he started having problems. But Greg always believed that God had a bigger purpose for this happening to him. And he said to me, I'm going to have a miracle. And this was in November before he got hurt. He said, my spirit is telling me something's going to happen, and it's going to be a miracle. And when it does, everybody's going to try to claim my miracle for me. He said, so I need to be ready. Whatever happens, I've got to be ready. And he was ready. And he fought 8.5 years through all this debilitating illness. He frequently had pneumonia. He was hospitalized probably 120 times during that time. And every time, you know, so after he was stabilized, I started checking in, how did this happen? How do you have, I mean, I've been to high school band competitions that have ambulances. How do you have a boxing match and not have ambulances? Well, then I started finding out about the director of the athletic commission and all that. Well, the end story to that is they all got fired. The whole commission got disbanded and fired.
Wow.
But it didn't actually happen because of the Greg Page incident. It happened because Mike Tyson came to town to fight in 2004. And the athletic commission, the same commission that were in charge when Greg got hurt, agreed not to charge sales taxes on the tickets, which lost the government money. The governor got pissed off and fired everybody. But that was a good thing because they created a new board, which was the Kentucky Boxing and Wrestling Authority, which you're in charge now. And they put a former boxer named Bud Shardine on the board, who knew Greg, and who has fought in those bars and know the kind of shady conditions that you fight under. And he fought tooth and nail to get the boxing regulations in the state of Kentucky changed. There were regulations that were on the books that were not followed, but they were not in line with federal regulations. So when I sued the athletic commission and all the commissioners and the doctor, they all said, well, we have our own laws. We don't have to follow federal law. Well, anybody, any idiot knows that if the federal laws are stricter, that's what you have to go by. So I did prevail in a lawsuit against them, but the only way that I did is because every time Greg would get sick and go in the hospital, which he went into respiratory arrest several times here at home, which was a horrible thing to have to watch somebody die a little bit more every day, knowing it was going to come, just not when. But every time he would go in the hospital, I would allow the hospital to issue a press release. Greg Page has been hospitalized again. And, of course, that would start the reporters going to the state saying, how did this happen? How did you not have an ambulance there? How did this happen? Why, you know, what have you done to change it? Well, nothing was done to change it. So after, I don't know, 100 or so times, they finally said, what is it going to take to make this woman go away? We need to change the regulations. We need to make safety first. So that's when they created the Boxing Authority. And their first priority is safety. And I will tell you now, nobody knows where I'm going to show up. I will show up at a fight, and I will go to the person who says they're the doctor, and I want to say, I want to see your credentials. I will go to the ambulance, and I will say, if a boxer gets hurt tonight, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to take him to the hospital. How are you going to get him there? What's the route you're going to get out of this building? And at first, people got offended. But I really don't care.
Right.
You know, because my attitude is, and Greg's attitude was, if we can stop this from happening to one other person, then Greg can be a martyr for the cause. And he was a martyr for the cause. So the fact that the International Boxing Hall of Fame, and I'll tell you, I sent a letter last year to the head of the Boxing Writers of, Association asking about how to get Greg on the ballot. And I was told unequivocally he would never be considered for the Boxing Hall of Fame because he wasn't that great a boxer. And it didn't matter.
He's only a former world champion.
And it didn't matter that he almost died in the ring and that boxing safety became a top priority. And people all over the United States and even other countries were talking about what happened to Greg Page should never have happened. He's never going to get in the Hall of Fame. You can forget about it. And then I hear we're inducting Sylvester Stallone because he was Rocky. He was a pretend boxer, and he wasn't a very good pretend boxer. Greg and I would I watched the Rocky shows. Greg and I would watch him, and he would look at me and say, a real boxer would never do that.
Exactly.
What is this? What are we going to do now? Are we going to induct Hulk Hogan because he was in one of the movies?
Yeah.
Are we going to induct Dolph Lundgren because he was in one of the movies?
Exactly.
My position is this. Many boxers strive to fight for that belt. Few get the chance to wear it. Greg Page was the USBA, which is now the IBF, champion for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was a WBA champion for 5 months. It doesn't matter. He still wore those two belts.
Exactly.
He still was their champion. And after he got hurt, he was a champion outside the ring. He fought. He never complained about why this happened to him. And I'll tell you an interesting story. And Greg got hurt March the 9th of 2001. In June, I was sitting in his room with him in the rehab center. He had just gotten done with the rehab and had gotten in the bed and was settled in. And we were watching the news. And the story came on TV about Beethoven Scotland getting killed in New York. In a similar situation. They couldn't get him out in time to get him proper care.
Right.
And Greg looked at me with tears in his eyes. He said, Patty, I can't talk to people anymore. You're going to have to take up this battle for me. Don't let this happen to somebody else.
Right.
And that's been my platform ever since. I've been accused of, by people who don't know me, been accused of using Greg's name for my own public gain and doing these stories for my own public gain. I have never been paid a penny to do any interview about Greg. He's been on the, we've been on the ESPN Outside the Lines show twice.
Yeah,
the Discovery Health Channel did a special segment on him on a show called Impact Stories of Survival. And he and the gentleman he fought his last fight were featured on the Oprah Winfrey Show as unlikely friends. None of us have ever received a dime for the things that we've done. I do it because I don't want what happened to my husband to happen to somebody else. And the fact that they would put a fake boxer, an actor boxer who was not that great of an actor, into the Hall of Fame and not even consider Greg is absolutely infuriating to me.
Ludicrous
is what it is.
It's a super reason, but one of the things that I'm, those individuals who were the perpetrators before, during, and after the fact of the injury that Greg Page suffered, were they ever adjudicated, brought to trial, arrested?
The head of the athletic commission was fired. He never faced any charges. The doctor did face charges. He paid a small amount. He was 77 years old. He was a Filipino doctor. It took him 9 times to pass the test to become a doctor in the first place.
Wow.
He was on suspension in Ohio because he was throwing narcotics in a dumpster behind his clinic, and junkies were getting the narcotics out of the dumpster.
Wow.
He was warned by the police department several times, and when he was, I think the third time that the police were called on him, one of the officers that responded was a female officer, and she was pregnant, and he kicked her in the stomach.
Wow.
And
well,
that
was
that. And exactly. And when they filed the criminal charges, he agreed to give up his license for a period of time and be on probation. I filed a claim, a complaint with the state of Ohio based on what happened to Greg, and they chose to do nothing to him. I filed a claim with the Athletic Commission from the state of Kentucky, and the only thing they did was put a letter of reprimand in the promoter's file, who is Terry O'Brien out of Covington, Kentucky, that he failed to provide oxygen at ringside as he should have. And as a matter of fact, Greg was only paid $1,500 for that fight.
Wow.
I had to call repeatedly. Finally, I called Jack Kearns, the athletic commissioner's house, collect, and said, the promoter has not paid my husband for his fight. He's in here fighting for his life. What am I supposed to do? And finally, the fight was on Friday night. Finally, late Sunday afternoon, the promoter showed up at the hospital with Greg's money, which is absolutely ludicrous. To this day, I've never received an apology from any of them. The athletic director, Jack Kearns, says he will go to his grave knowing that he did nothing wrong and there was nothing wrong that night.
Wow, that's amazing. But how can folks listening to you be a conduit to getting to the boxing commission, not boxing commission, the folks who vote people into the Hall of Fame and make a real heavy-duty protest and cry.
The last 2 years have been very difficult for me.
Yeah.
I'm just now, I think, finally getting through a lot of the grief. Even though we knew it was coming, it was still very painful to watch happen. And I've just not been quite as active and proactive as I have been in the past. I have started a Facebook page called Induct Greg Page into the Hall of Fame. I encourage people to join. We're going to be starting a letter writing campaign. We're just going to bombard the Boxing Writers Association of America and also to the Boxing Hall of Fame, Mr. Brophy, who I have spoken to, and just demand. And that's the only way I know to get attention, is to talk about it every chance that I get, and until they do like the state of Kentucky, what can we do to make this woman go away? Right. Put my husband in the Hall of Fame where he belongs. And to me, I will spend up to my last dying breath trying to do that, because that's Greg's legacy, and he deserves that.
He do.
You know, he gave his life for his sport. You know, you can say what you want to. At the end of the day, there were some fights that Greg was ill prepared for. He had contract problems with Don King and with Butch Lewis and all those crazy things, but he still was the heavyweight champion of the world.
He gave his all.
He still held two belts. And you know, as opposed to an actor who pretended to be a fighter, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I will not take no for an answer.
This is Melissa Jr., Patty, and I have to truly, truly commend you on your courageous fight and your courageous journey to set the record straight in regard to Greg and kind of shed a light on what these tremendous athletes go through. You know, we have Harold Weston here on the panel. We have Casino Baby Lewis on the panel. And even though they never talk about it, these men are modern-day gladiators. And for you to say that there was no oxygen, no licensed medical person on staff or on hand, that there was no way to get the medical, whatever kind of medical people or equipment in or out, is a total disgrace. Here we have men putting their lives on the line for our entertainment, modern-day gladiators, and you're telling us that they have not the least bit of medical personnel on hand in case of emergency.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, it's not just Greg's case that I take up. The gentleman's name escapes me, but in Utah a couple years ago, a boxer took a fight at the last minute because his mother died, and he needed the money to get back to her funeral. He was probably 75, 80 pounds overweight, and had high blood pressure. They put him in the ring, and he died in the first round.
Wow.
Recently, probably within 6 months ago, and I will try not to call any names here, but people will understand if they do a little bit of research what I'm talking about. I received an email from a gentleman who says, I understand that you are a proponent of boxer safety and mismatch fights, and I have a friend who is getting ready to fight that shouldn't be fighting. And he went on to tell me that up on the East Coast, a gentleman was getting ready to fight. He had fought 45 fights. His last fight, he had no idea when the fight was over, what was going on or anything. He had suffered a brain injury at that time.
Wow.
But the promoter, who was the promoter of that fight, was promoting him for a fight on the East Coast. And because this particular fighter wanted to retire with 50 fights under his belt. And he had no business, if he didn't know where he was at the last fight he was at, he had no business being in the ring again.
Exactly.
So I told the guy, I'm not a miracle worker, but I do have a mouth, I do know how to use it, and I do know what's supposed to happen. Let me make some phone calls and do some letter writing. So I contacted some friends of mine in the American Association of the Professional Ringside Physicians, who I hold in high esteem. And I said, what is the deal with this? How is this going to happen? And they said, the fight has not happened yet. Trust me, he will go through every fight, every test that we deem necessary, and if he does not pass, he will not fight. The
wow.
next day, the fights were called off.
Right.
And the promoter called me and said, I know that you had something to do with this. He said, but I want you to know I'm not that kind of guy. What kind of guy are you? You're the one that helped carry him out of the ring the last, his
yeah.
last fight, and you're promoting
exactly.
him again. You know, but that happens every day. Yeah, I mean, the boxer is the one that puts the blood, sweat, and the tears into it. He's the one out there training every day. You got his manager, you got his entourage, you got the promoter. They're all making money off his back.
Yep, and he's the only one in the ring getting
yeah.
injured.
Harold, you're listening. You're a guy who, I mean, you work with Don. You know, some thoughts from the incomparable Harold Russell Jr.
Well, it's not much I can say. I mean, Patty's she's right on point. I mean, there's nothing to comment on. I mean, the whole problem with this game is the fact that nobody support nobody when something is very critical. It looks like everybody just turns their face away from the issues that's
yeah.
at hand. And the big problem is that you know, they only want to get bylaws go down when the Senate wants to come up and talk about doing some banning of boxing, and that's when everybody wants to come in with crazy, stupid rules that don't even mean nothing. Like, one particular rule that I thought was very stupid is the fact that you got guys weighing in the day before a fight, and you let
yep,
another
absolutely.
Guy come, you know, weigh in that day. He's weighing 15 pounds more than the other guy. I mean, that's really deadly in the sport. That guys was punishing each other. So I mean, there's
like
a lot of
saying.
Things that I argue about in this sport. But I, you know, unless you got a big support with you and a lot of people involved, and the most important people, you got the senators or somebody involved with you, you're not gonna get nothing done until they'll take those steps to make things happen.
And unfortunately, that's another sore point with me. Unfortunately, and I don't, and I really believe most of the time the government meddles in our business way too much. However, having said that, and I'll probably have all kinds of government officials on my doorstep tomorrow. But having said that, I will say this: most, not all, but most athletic commissions or boxing commissions are political appointees.
Yeah.
One of the women that was on the Kentucky Athletic Commission when Greg got hurt, her only claim to fame was she had been a cheerleader, and she had met the athletic director in a restaurant. He said, "Oh, we need another commissioner. Why don't you be a commissioner on our board?" And she said, "Yes." So most of them are political appointees who don't know a damn thing about boxing, who could care less. About whether a boxer is safe or not safe, and they just really don't care. And, you know, some of them just do it for the glory of being, saying they're a boxing commissioner, you know. So in this instance, I have to say, I've went back and forth about this, and I've talked to so many people about this, but I think that we need a federal oversight because every state can do what they want to do.
Right.
And it changes from state to state. Some states you have very little or nothing to do to pass. You know, I had an instance where my brother-in-law was putting on fights here in Kentucky after Greg passed away. And one of the guys that was fighting was a Nigerian kid. He's 42. I watched him get brutally knocked out in three fights.
Wow.
His daughter is one of the top amateurs here in the country. She's 17. She said, "Daddy, please stop fighting." No, it was a setup. They just didn't want me to win.
Wow.
I went to this guy and I said, "Look, please, in the name of Greg Page, don't go into the ring again." I said, "You're going to get hurt. You're going to get killed." I mean, two of the fights, he was knocked out in the first round.
Wow.
In the first round, had no idea what was going on. He had no business being in the ring. None. Absolutely none. He refused to quit fighting. So
yeah,
what I did, and he got
so
mad at me.
Call his show. Mrs. Greg Page is on the radio.
Yeah.
Greg Page is on the radio.
This particular boxer is still mad at me. But I contacted.
About Greg Page's death, how he died in the ring.
Hoopster, can I ask you a question, Mr.
Greg
Page?
From Louisville.
Sure.
Yes.
And also, hold on, Dusty. Doc Stanley Sports
Depth.
Dusty, hold on. Doc Stanley Sports Depth from the Blake.
Yeah,
Radio Network Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Depth is the show.
Yeah,
a special show. Hoopsta!
Yeah.
Hoopsta!
I know
Lady
would like to listen to this.
Hoopsta!
Listen to it now.
Okay. Hoopsta. Hold on a second.
Yeah,
hold on. Hoopsta. Okay, Hoopsta!
So I'm on in listening to it now.
Big C.
I'm just calling.
Yeah,
cool.
I'm right here.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Okay, we got you. Hey, you
going to join us? I'm on the queue. I've been on the queue for like 20 minutes. He hasn't plugged me in.
Okay. I'll get it that. Okay,
hey, Tom, can I ask Mrs. Page a question?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Hold on, Louis. Let's hold tight. Okay, everybody, hold on. Okay, Big C, we got Lady A. Let's get her in. Everybody here right now. Big C.
Everyone's in.
Okay, you got her in? Can Lady A in now? Okay.
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay. First of all, everybody, Lady A, Harold, Dusty, and myself, and Mel Smith Jr. At this time, we want to send our condolences to Hoopster here. He's our basketball maven. This past weekend, he lost his mother.
We spoke about that
the other day, Dusty. And at this time, we are dedicating this show to Greg Page and also to Mrs. Helen Hart, his mother.
His mom.
Yes, Hoopster, without question, you can ask Mrs. Page a question, and the floor is yours.
Yeah,
hi,
Mrs. Page, how you doing? I commend you what you're doing. You did about writing
fine,
a book about
you.
This?
I have considered writing a book about it, but the grief has still been so raw for me. It's been very difficult.
Well, can I say something, Mrs. Page? You should write it. Let everybody know what's going on. You should bring your voice out. Let everybody know what's happening. Maybe Greg could try getting in there, in the Hall of Fame. He deserves to be in there.
Thank you very much. As
welcome,
I said, I have given considerable thought to writing a book, but the grief has been so raw and it's been very difficult for me, but I'm getting beyond that now. It's been it'll be 2 years the end of this month, and it's just been a very, very difficult time. And I have to say, a critical illness like Greg had and his death brings out really, really ugly things in people.
Yeah.
And I had a very difficult time getting people to come and help me take care of him because nobody wanted to see him like he was. No family members wanted to see him like he was, which I understand that, you know, but it's either that or go and talk to a headstone. And now, unfortunately, they had to go and talk to a headstone because they chose not to come and help. Mm. And so, yes, I have thought about writing a book. Actually, there is a screenplay that was written about Dale Crow, who was Greg's last opponent, and Greg's friendship. It's called The 10th Round. We're currently a screenplay writer out in California is currently looking for a boxing name to put behind it to help get a push because it was a tremendous story. I mean, this kid that he fought, 24 years old, and his life, as far as he was concerned, was over. He almost killed a man, and it wasn't his fault at all. And the year after it happened, a promoter of his managed to get a meeting between Greg and he, and Greg looked at him and said, "Dude, you're not that important." He said, "I'm Greg Page." He said, "We were both in the ring that night to do a job. It could have been you. It could have been me. God chose me because I got a name and people are going to listen to what I have to say."
Right.
He said, so don't worry about that. Just go on with your life and let's be friends. And they became great friends.
Can I ask you a question, Mrs. Page?
Sure.
Dusty, you are out of questions at least to June 3rd of 2012.
Are you over the Manny Ramirez thing yet? You ready to ask a question now or what?
No, because it goes to the grain of what Greg Page and Mrs. Page has gone to.
Dusty, ask the question. Go ahead.
What, would you wait a minute? I'm doing it as professionally and as kind as I can. That's how you we have noticed that across the board in all athletic events or all athletic endeavors, whether it's basketball or baseball or football, there is one commission that governs that particular sport, number one.
Absolutely.
Not the different states that have their own little bag, number one. Number two, like
absolutely.
Boxing.
Absolutely.
They are signed to good salary contracts, one or two, and at the same time, there is an inbred pension system for fighters. The reason I'm saying this is because you just finished telling us about this African who got knocked out twice in the first round and then the third fight. He didn't know where the heck he was going, but he probably, because this is the only thing he knew and needed the money, that he risked his life. You have guys like Mildred Taylor who are walking around on their heels and still fighting. So
absolutely.
I'm wondering if getting to the congressional bid or federal whatever, if this would correct all the ills, and believe me, there's a bag full of ills in boxing, and sort of modify them to the safety and professionalism of the other sports. You know, you see the NBA playoffs, you see the baseball players, they retire, they have their pension system, the whole nine yards. A boxer, born by to with my life when I was a kid, starts on his own with a few pennies in his pocket, and he has
absolutely.
To pay for his license, buy his equipment, buy this, that, and the other, you know, and go on from there, hoping to make enough money to make it look like a lucrative career.
You're absolutely correct. That is why I believe that, like I said, I think the government meddles in our life too much. But in this instance, I believe we need to have a federal oversight board,
right.
Because there should be one standard all the way across the board. There
mm-hmm.
should be a pension for boxers. The only problem with that, several boxers that I've talked to don't want to give up the money. They don't. They don't want to be involved in a pension, which is that. And they're their own worst enemy.
Absolutely.
I have a friend of Greg's who is in his early 50s now, and he would get back in the ring in a minute if somebody was signing. And I said to him, "What are you thinking?" He said, "You don't understand." He said, "We work and we work and we work." He said, "You know, we train 7 days a week."
Mm-hmm.
He said, and you make that march from the dressing room to the ring. Everybody's
right.
chanting your name. He said, "There is no other adrenaline rush out there that competes with that."
Exactly.
He said, that's just the sportsman in us. And unfortunately,
it's addictive.
And believe me, and I'm not a bigot of any kind, but unfortunately, a lot of these guys, like Greg, came out of the ghetto, out of the
yep.
bricks. They make it big. They have these huge entourages that they have to have.
Exactly.
And they all take advantage of them. Like Mike Tyson. Look at Mike.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, unfortunately, that's what happens, and they don't know what to do with the money. You know, it's either, you know, there are women throwing themselves at them, and there are people throwing money at them, and there are people dragging them to this party and that party, and then there's a drug thing, and you know, sometimes these fighters are their worst enemies. There are fighters that are fighting right now. Top name fighters that I think have no business being in the ring.
Well, if they were, well, there was a story, a fact coming out of Louisville where Clay, now Muhammad Ali, was taken over by these 10 supposedly businessmen who incorporated, who took over his purses, promoted him, and took his money and paid him a salary of his monies, and then they invested the major part of his portion for a trust fund. I dare say that today, if it's still lucrative, he's living on a trust fund. I think I read it about 3 months ago that he's living on a trust fund of almost $200,000 to $300,000 for the rest of his life. Now,
mm-hmm.
is that also part of the collaborative effort that we got to make the fighters and the commissions realize to invest? We have got
to make these guys understand that
right.
the fighter is their bread and butter. The
exactly.
safety of the fighter should be first and foremost.
Right.
You know, just like, you know, letting the guy weigh in the day of the fight and he comes in 15 pounds over. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Mm.
You know, and then you have these guys that starve themselves and go on dehydrated and those kinds of things. And all those things shouldn't happen. But,
right.
You know, if you've got, you know, the bad thing of it is boxing is the only sport that does not take care of its own. It's like
Amen.
These boxers are fed to the wolves. You know, you have their, like I said, you have their managers, their promoters, their trainers. They all get a cut of the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Greg's instance, one of the things that made me so furious in Greg's instance is that the Kentucky Athletic Commission put up $600 to help promote the fight.
Wow.
So they had 600 reasons for that fight to go on that night, no matter what the circumstances were. That fight was going to happen no matter what.
It's all and about
boxing
the
commission
the day,
has, a boxing commission has a boxing commission has no authority to promote a fight that they are overseeing. That is ridiculous.
Oh, have an interest, a financial interest in the fight. I mean, in the commission. I mean, the fight itself. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. So, so if the commissioner gets there and there's no ambulance there, why does he care?
Mm-hmm. You know,
this is the thing. This is the thing. Like I said, I filed a lawsuit. I filed a huge lawsuit, and one of the actual director of the athletic commission was asked. Greg's manager had made a comment to them, there's not an ambulance here, there's not even a stretcher here. And they said that the commissioners that were there that night got together and had a meeting and said, well, that's okay, the hospital is only 3 blocks away, if anything happens, we're going to be okay. And they chose to let the fights go on anyway.
Doc Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake, Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, Sports Enough Show. Patty.
Yes.
Paige is with us. She sounds like a singer. She sure has a sweet voice like one. The panel is here. It is a dedication to her late husband, former heavyweight champion of the world, one of only four from Louisville, Kentucky. If you can call and give me the three names of the other gentlemen, I may have a little surprise for you. And New York City also has four of them from Brownsville, Iron, Mike Tyson, Riddick, Big Daddy, Bo, Floyd Patterson, and Shannon Briggs. Big C, I need you to do me a little commercial hit, and then we're going to come back as we go into the second part of an evening with the lovely Patty Page. So, Big C, give us a little commercial break. Rooney, I know you got a question or two. She's here for the taking. We've got it for 1 hour. We've got it for the next hour. A commercial break and back with an in-depth look and a dedication to heavyweight champion and a heavyweight lady. Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports and Depth is the show. They're here. Harold Weston, Jr., Justino, Baby Lewis, The Hoopster, Lady A, and Little Coco. Big C. And Big C, if you chime in here, you got something to question? Hey, please, by all means, she's here. But right now, it's a commercial break.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
And we're going to go back up to the control panel. Big C.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, okay.
Wrong one?
No, Big C at the control. Big C, I need you to, once again, if you ask the question, inform the viewers how they can listen to us here and in the future. And then, once again, the stage will belong to the lovely Patty Gray. Big C, it's your call.
Absolutely.
Big C?
Doc?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't catch that last part, sorry.
Oh, give us the 411 on how the show can be listened to live, and then if you have a question for Ms. Page, if not, the floor is hers one more time.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to listen to our live broadcast. Just log on to BlakeRadio.com, follow the prompts to Rainbow Soul. This will give you access to our current show, streaming live, or you can listen to any of our archive shows. Now, to take us on the road, please download the Stitcher app, which is available for free,
and it'll run on your iPhone, on your Android phone, your BlackBerry, and your Palm-enabled smart devices. Doc? And this is Paige. Just continue the fight. A lot of credit, a lot of respect, and I admire people in your position who have gone up against adversity and are still fighting. And you're an inspiration to all of us and the sport itself. So thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that. One thing you're going to find out about me is I am brutally honest. I'm sorry if I step on people's toes. I know I'm not always politically correct. But, you know, I have to get the message out there. What happened to Greg should never have happened. Greg was a great man. I mean, I've known him for 36 years, and this is going to surprise some folk. Greg and I had only been dating for 4 months when he got hurt.
Wow.
And the easiest thing in the world would have been to do would have been to turn and run away. But that was not the right thing to do. I made Greg a promise once he was out of the coma, I'm here with you. I will be here with you as long as you want me here. I will take care of you. I will give you the absolute best of care money can buy. And I will not put you in a nursing home. And I will take the best care of you I can. And I absolutely did that. Greg had been home from the hospital for 3 weeks before he passed away at home.
Oh. Ms. Page, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You got a court date coming up with this? Or are you still waiting?
No, the lawsuit actually settled, and the as I said, the state finally said, you know, they offered me $250,000, and I said, I'll take my chances with a jury and never see a penny. And that's the interesting thing, because after Greg was out of the woods and doing his rehab every day, I contacted an attorney, and he gathered records, and he said, let me think about it. I'll get back with you. And he called and asked to come and see me. And when he came to see me, he said, you know, he said, boxing's a dangerous sport, and when these guys step into the ring, anything can happen. I said, you're right. I said, but there are laws to keep, you know, I can get in a car and drive a car, and if I don't wear my seatbelt, it's my fault if something happens.
Right.
I said, but it was not Greg's fault that night. He said, you're absolutely right. He said, I got to looking at the case law, and he said, there's really not a whole lot that we're going to be able to do. He said, but then I watched the videotape of the fight. They were amateur videos, so they were really grainy videos. He said, and I got so goddamn mad that I decided this is a case I had to take in principle. He said, here is a man laying in the middle of the ring in a coma, and everybody's dancing around and partying, but it's corner people, and the doctor is sneaking out the door.
Wow.
He said, I will take this case for you. He said, you will probably never see a penny. He said, but it's a case in principle. Somebody needs to be told what happened. So, as I said, every time he went into the hospital, I let the press all over it, all over it. I lived a very private tragedy in a very public manner. I mean, I would not let the photographers come in and actually take pictures of Greg on life support, but I let them know he was on life support. I was careful to, I didn't want them to see that, but I wanted them to know what was going on.
Okay.
And so finally they said, what is it going to, we were a month away from trial. I was ready to go, had no problem with that. And they said, what is it going to take to make this woman go away? So finally they made us an offer of $1.2 million, which, wait, that sounds like great money, except for it's a paltry sum for a man's life. However, there were three attorneys that were involved. They each got a third cut. There were four insurance companies that were involved. They each got their money back. All the expenses were paid out. Greg was left with very little actual dollars to deal with. But that money did help make him comfortable for the rest of his life. I don't know how you put a price on a man's life. A man who was healthy as a horse and died at the age of 50, which is tragic. And the amazing thing about Greg Page is, as he was training for this fight, he was also working at a factory 4 days a week, and he had to wear steel-toed boots at the factory. Greg was when Greg was beginning to train early on in his career, his trainer was a little guy named Baby Leroy Emerson. And Baby Leroy made them run in boots, in combat boots. And
yes.
Greg, at 42 years old, Greg Page ran 5 miles in the morning in steel-toed combat boots up the hills of the park close to a house that we live in, and he ran 5 miles again in the evening and put in 4 hours of training in the evening after working 10-hour shift at work.
Wow.
So the idiots out there that say Greg Page is 42 years old, he shouldn't have been in the ring, don't know what they were talking about.
But his training with the steel toe boots was a flashback to our days. We did run, not with Nikes or little Pumas. We ran with steel toe boots. That's why our stamina was so much greater than today's.
And the thing of it is, Greg was doing the majority of his fighting. His glory days were in the 80s, and in those days, those guys fought 15 rounds.
15.
Yeah,
yep. 15 brutal rounds.
Yeah. These guys can't.
And the thing I love about the guys of the 80s, not only the heavyweights, but the guys of the 80s, they had a style. They had footwork. They had movement. Now it's all about brute force and going in there and let's see who can knock somebody out first.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that I don't know how you follow all sports, I know. There's been a lot of research that's been done with the Football Commission and rules and regulations that are going to be changing about the amounts of concussions a football player can withstand before he's not allowed to play anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Greg Page's brain was part of those studies.
Was that part of the study that was conducted by that student from Yale? That was a football player
The study was actually conducted by the Sports Legacy Institute, which is run by a former wrestler named Chris Nowinski.
Rooney, that's one of your boys.
They're out of Boston. University of Boston.
Yeah, WWE.
Right.
And what was happening were these football players were getting depressed and committing suicide in their 40s.
Yes.
And so they started examining their brain.
That's correct.
And they were finding they had a condition called chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, these 45-year-old guys, had the brains of 80-year-old men with dementia.
Wow.
Right.
Because of the head injuries they were suffering, so you can imagine with a boxer how it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
So now, due to that research, they have come up with a preliminary test that can sort of pick out some indicators that might say, hey, there might be a problem.
Right.
You know, we might need to watch this.
Right.
Right.
And it's going to be and proudly, Greg is part of that. Was part of that research.
Well, we see that. I think that even like as early as this past season. I mean, in the last season, we saw a lot of helmet to helmet hits, and the NFL was coming down heavy on that this past season. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say that they're going to make a lot more changes now.
I was getting ready to say you were going to see a lot more changes,
right?
And not only at the NFL level, but the college levels and lower down, because it starts lower down as well. And, you know, when a concussion is brain injury,
mm-hmm.
brain cells die. And, you know, you can only take so many of those, you know, and something needs to be done. So things do need to change. And I think that safety has got to be the top priority of any sport. But the only thing, especially with boxers, I have to go back to it again. You have the managers, the promoters, the trainers. They're all taking money off this man's back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, and they goad him into, you got to get in there and do it. You got to get in there and do it. You know, and I was recently in 2002. I was invited to a medical convention that the American Association of Professional Ringside Physicians were having. And there was a doctor who, there was a fight that had happened a few months before that caused a lot of furor because it was one of the Klitschko brothers, and I can't remember who he was fighting. It's been a while ago. I've slept since then. But they stopped the fight, and the doctor was criticized for stopping the fight too early. And I had the privilege of meeting Dr. Wallace from California, and I asked him, I said, Dr. Wallace, I said, I've got to know what happened. He said, Ms. Page, I was standing in front of him. I had my hand in front of his face. He could not see my fingers. How could he defend himself? He said, I backed my decision. I don't care who got offended by it. He said, I did the right thing. He lived to fight another day.
Okay. And that's basically an official who's really taking his responsibility very seriously. There's a lot of folks, there's a lot of pressure on these folks, including the referees, who are hired by the promoters, who are mandated, you know, as long as a dude can throw a punch, let him fight. And they don't take the person's health and well-being and future into consideration. You know, yesterday I saw a championship fight in Puerto Rico where the champion was angry at the referee, wanted to beat up the referee because the referee stopped the fight.
And that is absolutely ridiculous because you cannot get, I don't care who it is, you cannot get a boxer who is in a match to say, okay, I quit. They're not trained that way. And I will tell you another personal story. This is a true story. I had a chance to meet a few years after Greg got hurt, Lisa McClellan. She is the sister and caretaker of Gerald McClellan. And I love the G-Man. I love the G-Man. I love his sister. They're great people. During talking with her and sharing my story with her and grieving with her, she told me that, first of all, my take on it is, when Nigel Benn was knocked out of that ring that first round, it was over.
Yeah, you know, Patty, you hit a point, and the words of Harold Weston, and just like Rooney is a point well taken, should be trademarked. Harold, your great line of sad and touching should be trademarked, because if the referee had have done what he should have done, what he's paid to done, and was obvious what should have been done, Gerald McClellan is not in the condition that he's in, and we still had an outstanding fight. You know, you talk about Gerald. I remember when I covered the fights in Mexico for Don King, as I was going toward the gate. Those were the days pre 9/11, and the guy said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And it was Gerald. We had met at a fight out in Vegas, and I remember we were staying in the same hotel. And I remember after the fight, it was Chavez against Lopez. Trinidad fought, Terry Norris fought on the card. Chito Trinidad fought on the card, and a very young Chito Trinidad. And it was, the main event was the Julio Cesar Chavez, the great Chavez, against a guy named Lopez. So when we got back to the hotel, Don was contemplating sending us to some other country. And I remember it was the last time I saw Joe before the accident. I said, "Where you going, G-Man?" He said, "Man, I got to get out of here, man, for Don tried to send me someplace else." But he was a great guy, became a friend of mine, and we take our hat off to Teddy Blackburn, who has sort of been a surrogate brother in helping Gerald with a lot of things. But he has,
and I have to give a plug to Roy Jones Jr., who has also been there for the McClellans.
No, it's funny you mentioned Roy.
But my reason for bringing this up is
go ahead.
Last couple rounds of the fight, Gerald was telling his corner people, "I can't see.
Wow.
I'm having a problem seeing." And they kept sending him back in there. Gerald's basic brain damage was his temporal lobe. That is the front where the behavior and vision and all and the hearing and all that are ruled from. He was telling them, "I can't see," and they kept sending him back into the fight. So you see, as long as you've got somebody there that's making money off your back, they don't care.
Yeah, they actually encourage you to go back out. Everything's okay. Go back out. You know,
well,
do this, do that.
This is why last week when and we talked to Harold, and Harold, you could speak up. This is why you spoke so much. I remember your fight, Harold, with Pepino Cuevas, and Gil stopped the fight thinking that your jaw was broken. You said it wasn't. Gil didn't want to take a chance, and your jaw wasn't broken. But again, Harold, the concern of being concerned about you as a person, not as a fighter and a piece of meat, Harold.
Well, that was the great thing about Gil Clancy. I mean, if he felt that if you didn't have the right, you wasn't well equipped, or you couldn't handle yourself, he wouldn't put you in there. He was very critical about fighters that didn't win fights too. If you didn't have the ability, and this is what I love about him, if you didn't have the ability to be a world champion or being a good fighter, he would tell you to go get your job. Okay, simple like that. Go get your job.
Really.
Yeah, that's
exactly
the way he was.
Important, don't you think, Harold? Don't you think it's important for somebody to be there and just tell you straight up what the story is? I mean, you could get hurt in this sport.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, back in those days, and I'm talking about the 60s and 70s, back in those days, those gentlemen were real killers. I mean, we had deadly killers in there. And so, anybody that went to the boxing ring in those days, it wasn't no guarantee you coming out, all right, that night. And so, basically, you had to have that kind of ability to stay in there with these guys and day in and day out, especially in the gym, and then when you had the big fight. But Gil was very concerned about his guys. He never wanted his guys to get hurt, and all his fighters, nobody did get hurt. And so basically, they left with themselves together. I mean, with Emil, the problem with Emil is that he got jumped and some guys beat him up and they hit him with some things overhead, and that's why Emil's in the shape he's in. But in all picture with all the fighters that Gil have had, everybody walked out of there with their cells still in their head.
The brains,
So the most important thing, Gil worried about safeties, and we looked at things in that capacity.
And we need so many more like Gil Clancy.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, and this is not a popular opinion from what I hear, but I give my hats off to former Commissioner Larry Hazard. He stopped the controversial fight that should have been stopped, and he complained to the powers that be there in New Jersey, and they shut him up.
That's why they
got rid of him. But Larry Hazard is a gentleman, and he did the right thing. And people that do the right thing in the sport, they don't want to hear that.
Well,
the
problem with the sport altogether, you got incompetent people that's running the sport, don't have no knowledge what it feels like getting hit as a fighter, doesn't know the real reason how to defend the fighters themselves, and don't know how to go about it to put rules out there that's going to help to protect the fighter. So with all that being said, is the fact that you got a sport that you just got knuckleheads that's running it, calling shots. You got promoters don't have a idea with a fighter, how the fighter should, a left hook from a fish hook. I mean, so basically, you got a disaster. And I keep telling people this all the time. Right now, you have nobody in this game that has an idea how this sport should really be brought about and how to protect the fighters and really bring the sports back to its real points of heydays, because of the fact is that you have nobody. The fighters, the athletes, these fighters should be better than what we were back in the day.
Well,
but they're not. Everything else is better. But
I don't think they should be better. I mean, two thoughts here. I remember.
Well, they should be better, Mel,
because
what should have happened? No, listen to what I got to say. What should have happened? The guys that were fighters back then should have came back into the sport and taught the fighters doors.
Exactly.
Ever question me, because I'm going to put you down. I'm going to get you in school. I'm going to take you to school.
Now,
I'm going to take you to school.
Harold,
now,
calm down.
Let me explain to you. The point is this.
This is the first time I heard that, Harold.
Hold on, Harold.
But okay,
Mel, do you want me to tell you something, or you want to hear your own voice on it?
I want to shoot a quick question on you. It is a Doc Stanley show. I mean, why
You asked me a question.
Why are, okay, so how come guys like you are not back in the sport, Al?
Because you got this stupid rule. I mean, not stupid. You got this stupid situation that came to boxing. Don King signing fighters up. When that situation started, it didn't help the fighters. It ruined the sport.
Wow.
Because then when the fighters could not move around and had a platform to go and fight anywhere else, there was nothing else for them to do. Okay,
they had to wait for
those promoters to get a date for them to fight.
Oh.
Now, if you're a promoter and you got 1,000 fighters signed up, how are you
going
to put 1,000 fighters to work?
Absolutely. No, he's right because
I'm understanding what he's saying. He has a legitimate point.
Harold, that was why you didn't join the Don King tournament. Am I right?
That's right. I would never sign up with anybody. You're right. Because I think that, I should
contract,
be a free agent.
You're stuck.
Right.
You're
stuck.
Yeah, you're stuck with the one person who may not find your fights. And that's the problem. And Harold's right. You're locked in. The promoter says, okay, I'll take care of my money, guys. But Joe Doe over here, I'll see if I can find
him. You're on the point again because supposedly this is a big reason why Mike McCollum left Kronk because he felt, as rumor has it, that Manny was channeling everything toward Tommy. Am I right, Al?
Well, he had to. Tommy was the moneymaker.
Tommy was the man.
I mean, what part?
They're gonna go with them. They're gonna go with the moneymaker every time.
So, Doc, basically, Harold's saying that free agency and having to have a ton of options on everybody is what's helping to kill the sport. I mean, Doc, in a sense, we got baseball and Curb Flood all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, and the Blake, and Rainbow Sports Network show. The roundtable is here, Boxing Roundtable. Patty Page is the lady, and Lady A is also here. Harold Weston Jr., the Standard Baby Lewis, Mel Smith Jr., Steven Stein was here. We are doing a special show dedicated to the memory of her late husband, the great heavyweight champion, Greg Page, one of four heavyweight champions of Louisville, Kentucky, and Mrs. Helen Hart. Hoopster, you still there?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. And Hoops, will give us the NBA, what's happening real quick, scores tonight.
A joke.
And then we'll come back at 11:30, and Ms. Page will have the floor one more time. Did the Knicks pull that game out, Hoopster?
No, they lost.
They lost.
Ray Allen hit that shot, man. Unbelievable.
Okay, give us the scoop here. Next 5 minutes is your platform. What's happening in the NBA?
NBA, the Lakers lost. A lot of San Antonio lost.
Yep.
Only two teams was maintained was the Heat. That was
exactly.
It.
And the Knicks
all
lost.
All the favorites lost.
And Knicks lost on a buzzer bank.
Yeah, Ray Allen. Yeah.
Ray Allen. But we also we had Chicago continues to win, though. Right?
And Chicago won. Yeah, Derrick Rose. Like I said, MVP. I picked him all along in MVP.
Yeah. Well, Knicks wasn't a favorite to win, was he?
No, they weren't favorite to win.
Oh, that's what I thought.
No, they're not. No.
Yeah, I mean, real quickly, Hoops, give us your first team pick.
Okay. My picks. Okay.
Now you have first team, second team, third team. Rose is your MVP.
My first team, okay, I got Kevin Durant. I got LeBron James. Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, Derrick Rose.
Second team.
Second team, I got Carmelo Anthony, Stoudemire, Al Horford, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade.
And your third team?
Third team, I got Paul Gasol, Dirk Nowitzki, Tim Duncan, Ginobili, and Rondo.
Coach of the year?
Coach of the year, I got Doug Collins.
Rookie of the year?
Rookie of the year is Griffin.
MVP?
Derrick Rose.
Most improved player?
Kevin Love from Minnesota.
Hmm. Now, why Doug Collins? I mean, the guy in Chicago's got the best record of basketball.
Well, I have choices here, Doc.
Oh, give me some choices.
I got Doug Collins.
Uh-huh.
I got Monty Williams.
Yeah.
He did a hell of a job.
Yeah, okay.
Then you got Lyron Hollins from the Memphis Grizzlies. He did a hell of a job, too.
Okay.
So I got, and they also got George Karl.
Mm-hmm.
And I got Greg Popovich.
But what about the guy in Chicago? Was he chopped liver?
I heard my picks. I didn't pick him as the coach of the year. I just picked Collins.
Lady A, did you hear the Harold Weston in him? I got my picks.
Harold.
I'm back on Harold's statement before. I'm telling you, you let me finish talking.
Who's the wild? You know, how say, can I say? And my man said, I got my picks. God damn.
Listen, Harold told you. Harold told you. You want to let me finish talking? And your best comeback was, this is a Doc Stanley show.
It's a Doc Stanley show.
Hey. Hey, it's a Harold show. All right, every week, I got to call Harold. Harold, where's that? How's it? Now, this week, at least he had the first four numbers of the number. He had the 914. You know, but it's a good one. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, and the Blake Griffin, Rainbow Sports Network, the show, the panel is here. So basketball free ride, Knicks will come up short once again, no surprise there. But now, once again, we're going to go back to our boxing circle real quick last night. Dusty, the Latin side, give us a quick 2 minutes, and then I want you to get us back to Ms. Page. Juanma Lopez lost.
Yeah, Juanma Lopez fought the way he fought Rogers and Tagua, and this time it wasn't a Rogers and Tagua. It was a hungry Mexican Costa
Rico. And this time he got hit in the middle of the ring and fell down instead of getting hit against the ropes. Remember
that's how I was telling Mrs. Page that he was fighting back and throwing a few punches, but the referee saw that he was going to get hurt, and he stopped him. All of a sudden, he got his macho, and he wanted to jump on the referee, and there was a water bottle thrown into the ring the whole night.
Yeah, he was one of the commentators right there.
Hey, Dusty, you saw that fight with Victor Ortiz and Berto? Was that a fight or what?
I was just going to come up to it that the surprise of surprise, Victor Ortiz was supposed to be a sacrificial lamb for Andre Berto.
It wasn't so much a sacrificial lamb, Dusty. You know what? I'm glad I got to
say. Oh, no, he was. He was a bum of the month campaign by Berto.
The big thing, they were questioning his heart, wasn't it?
No. Why? Because even Tim Smith called him no heart.
Yes,
even
in the article in the Daily News yesterday.
Right, Tim Smith said he's no heart. And he was thrown in. First of all, he was supposed to be the second coming of Oscar De La Hoya. When he pulled that no mask with Maidana, they cast him aside. He wasn't getting any fights. He got the Tony Newton or whatever that previous fight, and he showed that maybe he had a little heart, even though Peterson came back in the last three rounds and they called it a draw. So Berto, looking for an easy payday, he got picked up on Victor Ortiz, and you could sell by the first round that Ortiz was, I'm not the chicken that everybody thinks I am.
Knocked him down four times.
The first one was a knockdown. It wasn't a slip.
Yep.
Victor Ortiz should give Berto a vote of thanks, not so much that he beat him yesterday, that he didn't fight Shane Mosley. Because he owes Shane Mosley a contract. Shane Mosley would have beaten Berto any time and every day on Sunday. And this kid came out determined. He became a welterweight. He put on some weight. He wasn't sloppy. And he was faster, stronger. By the fourth round, Berto was already tired, standing all over the place, man. Right. You know, so he was a sacrificial lamb. Now they got to eat crow because now this kid showed that he could take a punch. Did you see that horrific right-hand shot? It was harder than Maidana hit him. And this freaking kid went down and put
came
his
right
wrists
back
together.
Up.
Came right back
he
up.
He went back up and went
how
after
round?
Went
how about
after
the round
Berto.
With 10 seconds left and he knocks knocks Berto down?
Right.
Okay,
after
you know
Berto
what?
Left.
Give me a minute.
After Berto,
at the press conference, Richard Schaefer. Richard Schaefer is he's Golden Boy promoter. But let's listen to Richard, who predicted that Ortiz would win this fight that he won last night. Everybody, listen in.
Never seen him as focused as prepared. No upset knockout on Saturday night.
I really think so. I'm not saying that to hype the event or so. Because, you know, we have no skin in it. I mean, we're not going to get more money from tickets or whatever. So I have no... I really believe he's going to knock him out. I have never, ever seen Victor's focus. No smile, just like business. And that's pretty much the whole training camp he was like that. So I think we're gonna see a different
Victor. Well, there's Richard Schaefer.
Richard Schaefer had to cover his butt because he's CEO of Golden Boy. That's why he said that.
Dusty, I said what he's supposed to say, but Dusty, he was right.
Politically correct.
He was right.
Yeah.
He was
but you know what? You know what? Harold has said something a while ago that was true. It's like you know, you could tell a lot by the body language and the focus when someone walks into the ring. When you really looked at Berto, he didn't really look like he was even there yesterday.
When you saw him coming into the ring,
Victor Ortiz had the eye of the tiger yesterday.
Exactly. Yeah,
I mean,
right.
He looked
you
like he was ready to eat that guy up. And Jim Lampley alluded
to
it during the interview.
He did eat him up. He didn't look like it. He did.
Listen, Jim Lampley said he's fighting like a possessed person. He was fighting like he was possessed yesterday. That was hilarious.
Right.
He went in that ring and he was just like, I'm not going down.
I guess he must have read the Tim Smith article, too. So every time he saw Tim at ringside, he's, oh, man, I can really get
Let me ask a panel a question. Would this be a trilogy? Wamba gets knocked out. Berto loses. Does Pacquiao now lose to Mosley?
No.
I don't see that happening. I'm going to go to the senior guy on this. Hey, Harold, do you think he's going to lose or not?
Who's that?
You think Pacquiao's going to lose? I don't think
so.
No,
Pacquiao, see, it's one thing about Pacquiao. He's got too much riding on his shoulder. I mean, he's a senator. He's got a whole country. I mean, you know, and he's got a lot of pride. A lot of these guys don't even have pride, so I don't even count them. I like a guy like Pacquiao. I mean, he's coming in. He knows he has to win.
Let me ask you something, Harold, along with Dust, since you guys are the fighters.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. Can a guy, you mentioned all the pies that Pacquiao has fingers. He's running for office. He's doing this. Can a fighter be too busy, Harold, with outside influences?
Not really. I mean, when you got your mind focused and you know
there
that
you go.
You got somebody that's in front of you that's going to threaten to take something from you. Like a guy like Pacquiao, he's focused on that fight altogether. I mean, you know, especially coming down to that last 3 weeks of before the fight, because now you're really anxious and your body is getting into that timing of getting in shape. But no, he's not. He don't have that much. Because tell you the truth, let's be honest. Pacquiao is not that smart to be a congressman or anybody else.
No. Personality.
Okay? He's just his personality and where he stands at being champion. But to say that he's running things, give me a break. It's like when Aguilar was talking about he ran for office and he won. He wasn't running it. The people underneath him that's around him is running it.
Exactly.
So basically, he's not doing no work. So we're playing with ourselves and we're thinking that's happening.
No, it's his gophers who are peeping him. When he's in training camp, he has a gopher that runs the whatever they voted on or whatever, and he takes their advice as to do we go,
right.
We don't.
And he makes the calls of voting. That's all
he
it is.
Call the vote.
Mrs. Page still there.
Pacquiao has a strong mind. He's not detracted from. He knows the deviousness. He knows what he has in his mind to do to beat Chamo. Yesterday I saw that 360.
The fight camp.
He's sitting on there playing piano and joking and kidding, and he's smiling at you. He's laughing you to death. He's laughing you, taking you to the death tunnel, man. Because that is the throne where people say, well, he's so distracted, and then one time they say he refused to fly, so he drove all night to training camp. Oh, this guy's crazy. Instead of resting, he knows what he's doing. His mind is so. When he fought Margarito, he refused to eat extra food to meet Margarito's weight. I said, no. I need my speed. I don't need the extra weight. I need my
gentlemen,
speed.
Gentlemen, hold on. Ladies, gentlemen, real quickly. Let's listen. Big C, thanks for getting me in. Let's take a quick break here and listen to the new champion, and then we'll get back to Ms. Page. But the man whose heart was questioned, vicious Victor Ortiz. And funny, because, you know, Dusty, had you been to the press conference, you couldn't have asked that question about the fight because one of his PR guys had said, you know, they didn't want to answer that question. You know, so, you know, I mean, it's a question everybody wanted to ask. You know, it's like, you know, your pitcher gave a home run. You said, what pitch did you throw? I don't want to answer that question. But let's listen to the new champion, vicious Victor Ortiz, the new welterweight champion of the world and the victor over Andre Berto.
I always have respect for Bernard Hopkins. I love Bernard Hopkins. I love his style and just the kind of man that he is in the ring. I love Sugar Shane Mosley. He's one of my all-time favorites. Oscar De La Hoya, I respect him in and out of the ring. Just the way he is, the way he carries himself, the way he boxes, it was really my style, but he did the job and he got away with everything and became the champ that he was and will always go down in history as.
Yeah, it is.
As far as that goes, I mean,
Of course, not even I have my friend Manny Pacquiao, but we're in the same weight class. So I can't say a whole lot on that. As far as that goes, you know, one that really stood out for me as a kid was Fernando Vargas. Yeah, I loved how he fought. He carried a lot of ferocity in the ring with him. Mm-hmm. He was a monster. And, you know, he kind of stopped a little early, but, hey, it is what it is. He became world champion, and that's very admirable to me. So, you know, that was definitely one of the guys I looked up to.
Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That's him. Talk about some of his idols. And
well, of course, he has to say that he's with Golden Boy, so he has to be politically correct.
Well, that's the Fernando Vargas is not with Golden Boy.
I like
Boy.
To throw stones at you, Doc. Go ahead.
Hey, listen, it's a good thing I'm ducking too. You know what I mean?
Doctor, I would be remiss though if I didn't mention something to Mrs. Patty Page. I'd be remiss.
Good.
I just want to do this quickly and then give her the floor.
Are
you here, Mrs.
Up.
Page?
Time's up. Next question.
Dr. Tim, we'll come in and box you in a minute.
Good,
Mrs. Page.
Yes.
Just a quick thing with you. You know, the IBF, actually, of all people, you know, with the help of your cause, and again, it's a very courageous cause, and I commend you. You know, the people from the IBF, of all people, should really be behind you in your cause for this reason, if nothing else. There would be no IBF indirectly because of your husband, Greg Page. Because when Larry Holmes was WBC, WBA champ, Greg Page, big, strong, incredible hand speed, incredibly talented Greg Page, was the number one contender. Larry Holmes refused to fight the big, strong, young, up-and-coming Greg Page, and rather than risk the belt and possible loss of losing to Greg Page, not saying that Larry was scared of anybody, obviously the man was heavyweight champion of the world, but he went over to the IBF and became their standard bearer. And that
right.
gave credibility to the IBF, and that's basically indirectly why they are as big as they are now.
There's Bruni,
exactly.
A point well taken.
Thank you, Dr.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You forgot that. Yeah. You forgot that one. Yeah.
I got a couple random thoughts to throw out here. You guys have been talking about so much that my mind's going spinning. First of all, we're talking about the NBA. I used to follow the NBA a lot until I got involved in all the situation with Greg, and there's only so much my brain can handle. I ain't mad at LeBron James for leaving Cleveland. I ain't mad at him at all.
What?
I want to say that first.
Why?
You know, those people were so ugly when he left there. But he was there for 7 years. He did a lot of things for Cleveland. So I ain't mad at him. My number two point, I love Dennis Rodman. He's crazy as he want to be, but as the best, he was best rebounder in the NBA, and I used to love watching him play. I hate seeing him now because the way he looks now. I saw him on Dr. Drew recently, and it made me sad. But I had to throw those two things out there. There are some fighters that I wish would retire. I love Bernard Hopkins. I think that Bernard has the edge because he started later than everybody else.
Right.
And so he hasn't had as many brutal fights as everybody else. I love Bernard. I met him several years ago in New York, and he was very classy to me and classy to Greg, and that's important. I love watching Pauly fight. Pauly is so flashy, and Greg even loved watching him fight. I love Pacquiao. Those guys are fast and furious. I agree that Pacquiao is not running his country over there. Somebody's doing it for him. You know, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, but you know what? One of the things that I respect about athletes is when they give back to where they came from.
Right.
Some athletes come from other countries or whatever and never look back. And when they become famous and all that, they never look back. And I have a problem with athletes that don't give back. That's one of the reasons why I do everything I do for free, because I'm giving back in the name of Greg Page.
Okay.
And that's part of his legacy. And so those are a couple of things that I wanted to mention. Another thing I wanted to mention is that in honor of Greg, we created the Greg Page Foundation. The Greg Page Foundation is a 501c3 corporation that provides information to people with disabilities. It was important when after Greg got released from the hospital, it's like, okay, so now what do we do? You know, how do we modify our house? How do we get him in and out of the house? Those kinds of things. And that information is not readily available most of the time. So one of the things that we do is people that have a loved one who has a disability, they'll call us and they'll say, you know, I need to have a ramp built on my house. Can you help me figure out how? So we find the agencies to help them. And there have been a couple families that we've helped assist get equipment. And that's one of the things that we do. One of the sub things that we do is we have a boxing gym in Greg's name. Greg fought under the name of Boxer Gym, and we have a gym called the Boxer Memorial Gym. And so Greg lived long enough to see those things happen and was very proud of it. Matter of fact, when the last time he was in the hospital, we had a big banner made, and it said Greg Page Center in big red and black, which were his colors, and he was absolutely thrilled. So I continue and will continue to do what I think is right to complete the Greg Page legacy, and that will be I will fight to keep him, to get him into the International Boxing Hall of Fame.
I think it's
ridiculous. I think it's a slap in the face to him. I think it's a discredit to him and all that he gave to the sport. Greg would have been our Olympic contender had we not boycotted the Olympics in 1980. You can't take away the amateur that he was. When Greg was 15 years old, Muhammad Ali came to town because they opened the Muhammad Ali School of Boxing, which Muhammad had nothing to do with, but he came to help promote it. And Greg had the chance to spar with him. And he put Ali on his butt, which was a funny thing. A 15-year-old kid, you know, and when they talked to Ali later, he said, that boy hit me so hard it jarred my kinfolk in Africa.
I read about that, and Greg said that was the thrill of a lifetime, being able to box his idol.
The second thrill of his lifetime was obviously going to South Africa and winning the belt when he would get – Greg was the underdog, and actually – Coetzee's next fight was lined up and the posters were printed for his next fight, announcing him as champion.
Yeah, I remember
Greg
that.
Blew all that for them.
Yeah,
he
Greg
blew all that
down.
For them.
That was some fight.
You know, they really underestimated Greg, unfortunately, for them. Unfortunately for them, they underestimated him. But that was one of his prouder moments. It's another moment that really stood out for him, and the funny story that he always told was that when he was training in South Africa, he was staying at a resort there. And every morning when he went out to do his run, there were baboons out there, and the baboons would chase him. And he said, that made my ass run faster because the baboons were chasing me. So he used to always love telling that story about the baboons in South Africa chasing him. And then obviously the other shining moment that he was always so proud of was the fact that he decked Mike Tyson when Mike Tyson was getting ready for the Buster Douglas fight. And occasionally they still show that clip on TV. He came home and was so excited. He said he slipped. He said he didn't slip. He said I knocked his ass down. And I said, and the thing about it is Mike Tyson's big thing. I always thought Mike was a good fighter, but I thought Mike Tyson's big thing was always intimidation. He would stare his opponent down and terrify him.
Yeah.
But Greg Page that day revealed Mike Tyson ain't that bad. He can be beat. Plus Buster had lost his mother, which gave him added incentive, which is really kind of which goes on to in 2005 when Mike came here and fought Danny Williams and lost. They had a press conference and Greg was invited, and Greg was front row, and it was Mike's birthday, and we had gotten Mike a birthday cake, and so Greg is sitting front row, and as they were coming in. Greg and Mike had an off and on relationship, so I didn't really know what was going to happen. but Mike, they came in, and when Mike saw Greg, he immediately stopped, left his entourage, came to Greg, hugged him, kissed him on the cheek, and said, "Champ, I'm so glad to see you."
Wow.
And I was so happy with that moment. And he was so kind and so gentle, and his voice was so soft. I really had to listen hard to hear him. He was just that quiet. So when he went on the dais and was doing the press conference, several times he blew kisses at Greg and said, "Champ, it is so great to see you." And to me, I don't care what anybody says about anybody, as long as they treated Greg with respect. Oliver McCall, they'll call him a crackhead all day long. Oliver
right.
McCall was a champion, and he loved Greg
right.
Page. He came to town right. several times to see Greg Page. And I'm telling you, Oliver McCall has a son that's fighting right now who is a beast.
Wow.
That boy is a beast.
No,
and he's somebody to watch.
Just about Alex Lewis. His second fight with Lennox Lewis, you know, Lennox Lewis didn't win that fight. He just quit.
Yeah.
And when you talk about Mike Tyson, no, you talk about
Oliver quit, and Oliver gave he fought here in Louisville, and actually Greg worked his corner a few years ago,
right.
and which obviously I mean Greg didn't really do a whole lot, but he was there, and Oliver won. The thing about Oliver is when he came to see Greg, Greg wasn't Greg in the wheelchair. Greg was my former trainer, Greg Page. He didn't treat Greg like there was something wrong with him, and
right.
that's and he loved that. So
right.
you know we were he did an interview here when he was here, and he said that before he can go into a fight, he has to get himself worked up to cry to be ready to fight.
All right.
And he said that at one point in his life, his wife was pregnant, and he was out doing crack, and she was in the hospital delivering the baby, and the baby was born stillborn, and her name was Olivia. And he said a lot of times he uses that as his mental preparation for the fight.
Incentive. Yeah, watch
me. You know, but Oliver McCall always treated me like I was royalty. He's still great to me. He still talks to me. I think one of the most underrated champions that ever was Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes didn't get the respect that he deserved. He told me himself, I didn't fight Greg Page because they offered me more money to fight Jerry Cooney.
Jerry
he said,
Cooley.
Maybe it wasn't about nothing but the money. And maybe it was and maybe it wasn't. The other thing I had to say is that Greg used to carry his championship belts around in the back of his 84 Lincoln Continental. He was so proud of them.
Wow.
And he traveled around in his car a lot. So obviously they got really beat up. So last year I contacted the WBA and said, look, you know, Greg's belt is really beat up and it's lost some stones. And if, you know, could you take it and have it refurbished in his honor? They said, I'll tell you what, Miss Page, let us send you a brand new belt. So the Mendoza, Mr. Mendoza's son sent a brand new belt.
Brand new
for
belt.
Four
well, you know
years.
What? If you want to get rid of the old one, you can send it right here. We'll take it.
Can I ask you something, Mr. Page?
Now, listen to this one. For 4 years, I contacted Marion Muhammad, the IBF. Greg was their champion first. And I said, all I want is this belt refurbished. It's been knocked around. It's been beat up. Just fix it up for me. She wouldn't even return my phone calls.
Wow.
So last year they had the coup and fired her, and Daryl Peoples was involved. So about a month and a half ago, I faxed a letter to Daryl Peoples and said, look, all I'm asking for is find a belt maker who will refix his belt and put it back to that's all I'm asking. He was your champion. Can you fix the belt? Within 12 hours, I got a phone call from Mr. Peoples, and he said, Miss Page, I'm so sorry it's taken me this long to get back with you. I'm so sorry that IBF has been unresponsive. I can do this one of two ways for you. I can have you send me Greg's belt and I can fix it, or I can send you a new one. I said, Mr. Peoples, whatever is more convenient for you is fine with me. In 2 weeks, I had a brand new belt.
Wow.
And last year, simply because the WBC sent Greg an honorary belt. Because he wasn't their champion. Oliver was, and Greg trained Oliver. But because they had the respect for Greg and what he had went through, and Greg lived, he was the champion, and he died a champion. He fought his fight with his injury like a champion. The WBC sent him an honorary belt, which I thought was absolutely tremendous.
Wow.
That's good. Like I said, any of the old ones you have any room for, just send it over here. Doc Stanley, take it.
Doc Stanley Hall of Fame. Doc Stanley Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he'll start his own collection.
When I worked with Don King, I found out that I was the first person ever to give Don an on-the-air live radio interview. That was back when he first came on the scene. But when I worked with Don doing some security work for Tony Tucker when he was getting ready to fight Lennox Lewis, I brought, we had some leather jackets made, none of a kind, when we were out in Arizona. And when I got the jacket, it had two boxing gloves on the back, and I had fighters sign inside the boxing glove. Well, when I gave the jacket to the late Jose Torres, light heavyweight champion of the world, and the man who was the first fighter who had another anthem outside of the national anthem played at a fight, the Puerto Rican national anthem, he signed on the sleeve. And I said, okay, well, that's that. Well, lo and behold, one of the champions I have on that jacket, which makes it so special, because I don't think anybody else in the world has a jacket. Your husband's on that jacket, Patty. It's one of my pride and joys. Yeah, I've met Greg. I don't think anybody else in the world has a jacket like this. I mean, I have, your husband's on there, Archie Moore, Ingemar Johansson, Ali Frazier. But one of the things
that is absolutely awesome.
Yes.
The one thing about Greg was the people's champion.
When he first won the Madison Square Garden,
had time to stop and do autographs.
That's
It was never a bother for him. He never went anywhere that somebody didn't stop him, and he was always gracious about that. And even once he was injured. And when he would go out, I mean, I would get him out of the van, because at that time I had to pick him up myself and lift him up and put him in his wheelchair. We'd get his tux all straightened up. He said, "Come on, babe, it's showtime." And for him, it was showtime.
It's funny you should say showtime, Mrs. Page, because as a student of the sport, Greg was not only an incredibly talented boxer, but he was a showman, a true entertainer.
I'll tell you
a funny story. When he fought Scott Ledoux in Nassau in the Bahamas, he showed his tail in the ring, laughing at Scott and making fun of him and sticking his tongue out at him. And, man, I'm telling you, when he got out of that ring, his mother chewed him up one side and down the other. And she said, "Don't you ever act like a donkey in the ring again." He acted so silly. But Greg was a big jokester. He was a really funny guy. He just was a big prankster. And that was just Greg Page. I mean, every Friday night in Louisville, he was at the skating rink. He wore a size 15 shoe. He had to have roller skates made for him. I still have his size 15 roller skates. I mean, he was just a big kid. He loved to have fun, and up to the day he died, he loved to have fun.
When he was compared to Muhammad Ali, did he feel any pressure to be exactly like Ali, or did that give him more incentive because of a sense of pride of being?
He was very proud to be compared to Ali, but it was a very big shadow and very, very big shoes to fill. He and Ali had both went to the same high school. And they both were from Louisville. And so that was the comparison. He used some of Ali's style. He used some of Floyd Patterson's style, and he used his own style.
I see. So it was a combination of all.
And you know, but Greg was a great. You were right. He was a great showman. But the best thing about Greg Page is he was a class act. My words that I want everybody to know is this. God chose me and gave me the honor of having the last 10 years walk with Greg Page of his life. And that was truly an honor and a blessing, and that is something I will never forget.
And those that know you and him will never forget, too. Doc Stanley, Sports Endeavor on the Blake. Radio Network Rainbow Soul, Sports Endeavor, the show. It's a closing moment to Sports Endeavor. We want to thank Miss Paige for joining us, Patty. Gang, if you want to hang on, we'll do Sports Endeavor with the lights on, lights off and the mic on. We'll do another half hour. But in closing the first segment, we close in prayer. Simply the Lord, we thank you for all things great and wonderful come from you. Thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for being our God. Thank you for Christ on the cross. We ask these blessings and all the blessings in the name of your darling son, Jesus.
Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
Harry Hardesty, let's say goodnight.
Chris Page.
Yes.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Okay, gang, you want to do a 15 minutes of Sports in Depth with the mic on, lights off?
Yes,
Doc.
Okay, well,
you got it.
Patty, stay
you
with
know,
us.
Rooney.
And this is part two. This is Sports in Depth with the mic on, lights off. We continue with the lovely Patty Page in the roundtable panel. She's all yours. Take it away.
You know, Mrs. Page, I'm Mel Smith again. You know, my discipline is wrestling, and, you know, since this part entertainment, a lot of folks think we do that with smoke and mirrors, and there's not a lot of pain involved. But the truth be told, it's very painful. Everything in wrestling hurts, which I was kind of shocked to find out when I actually went into it. I say that to say this. You know, the folks don't really realize, like I said, the Harold Westons and the Casino Baby Lewis's, the guts and the heart it takes to walk that aisle and step those three steps. Because once you're in that ring, man, I mean, truly anything can happen. And, you know, we see the polished product. You know, the guys have already done their road work. The guys come in ready in their prime. But they don't see all the hours of being in the gym, getting hit with the big ball, all the sparring, all the getting up at 5 or 6 in the morning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have a son, and he's been a wrestling fan as long as I can remember. And I know for a fact you guys work as hard as boxers do.
It's brutal.
And I know that they say that wrestling is full of steroids and all that kind of stuff, and there are some, I know. But I know that basically the majority of you guys work your asses off. I know that.
It's the hardest thing that I ever tried to do. And the only reason I bring that up is, like I said, that's why I can appreciate and have the respect for the Baby Lewis's and the Harold Westons of the world, because even though it's a slightly different discipline, the pain is the same, okay?
Absolutely.
You want something? Great sacrifices, you know, to entertain others. And I just wanted to thank you again, Mrs. Page, for fighting a good fight. You have been a class act, and it's an absolute pleasure to have been able to say that I was on this panel and you shared some of your time with us. I'm extremely happy, and I won't forget that ever.
I definitely appreciate that. And I'll share a little tidbit with you that the information is out there now on the internet. The Sports Legacy Institute, who has done most of the research on brain damage and concussions and all that, they did brain injury. They did a brain research on Chris Benoit. He also had brain damage.
Not only was it the roid rage,
he also suffered from the same types of injuries that these football players that have this.
Well,
this
Mr. Page, his finishing move was that he used to lead with his head every night. So I know folks are going to find this hard to believe, but in all truthfulness, he basically suffered a concussion the night. Please continue.
Absolutely.
To interrupt.
Absolutely. People think when those guys are getting hit over the head that it's just fake, but it's not. It's really not. So there's definitely something to be said for it, and I firmly believe that wrestlers definitely are athletes. And I also have to go on record to say I don't believe a boxer should step into an MMA ring. Just because you're a boxer, you can't be an MMA fighter.
You sound
They're
like you
saw totally
the James Toney
things.
Fight, Mrs. Page. You sound like you watched the James Toney fight.
I mean, if you come out of a ring and they have to use a teleprompter to say what you're saying because
exactly.
they can't understand your speech, you shouldn't be in there.
The boxers don't do well in that anyway, quite frankly, boxers.
Look, let me tell you something. If I had a choice of wrestling and boxing, I stay in the ring boxing. I wanna always be standing up. I don't want no 2,000-pound body jumping on me.
those MMA fights are fast and brutal.
Yeah.
And then, I believe it or not, they're actually outlawed in New York State, although there's a movement on, but they actually are outlawed in the state of New York itself, New York proper, and the outer outskirts. The Jersey is the closest they will get to having any type of MMA here for now.
Yeah, that stuff just really scares me. That just really scares me.
You know what, too, Rooney? When it first came out, it was more brutal than now.
Yeah, they actually have rules now.
But it was more brutal, I think, when it first came out. Because I don't think they had the rules they had now, and you saw a lot more blood.
You're right about that.
It was worse.
Yeah, it's absolutely worse. I just saw a guy Monday night. My son watches that WWE, whatever it is, you know.
Right.
And this guy came up. He was a champion, and he announced his retirement
from the ring because
he had received his neck had been broken.
Yeah, that
his
was
neck had been
edge.
Broken, and they had to put a steel rod on his neck and all that.
Oh my God!
No.
Is that kind of
thing,
Dusty?
Huh?
That was Adam Copeland, known as Edge.
That's the guy.
Yeah, Edge,
and he said, if I fought anymore, I would die in the ring. I said, and this is supposed to be phony? Are you kidding? A broken neck?
What happened is, very early in his career, about 7 years ago, he actually suffered a broken neck in one of his matches. And they did this incredible surgery. You know, where they basically kind of turned the whole body around and put rods there and there.
Exactly.
So he was resting on borrowed time. He knew that was only a matter of time before.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, you know, I have to tell you, Dusty, that everybody involved in wrestling has two things going. Usually some type of neck problem, and everyone has a bad back.
Exactly. You remember the guy years ago who leaped from the steel cage?
Superfly Snuka.
It broke his neck.
Snuka.
Right.
Jimmy Snuka, yeah.
Snuka, and he leaped from you guys remember, Dusty,
you got a 250-60-pound guy jumping from that 20-foot gauge.
Exactly. When you come down at that speed, forget about it. Your body, you know, wrestling is a monster, man.
All you have to do right now, Dusty, and I'll say this to Lady A, because I know she'll enjoy it. They have a thing called Tough Enough, where they have a couple of hopefuls trying to make the WWE.
It shows the minimum of
what it takes to get there, and you'll be shocked at what truly goes on.
I can imagine, but I stand there. I said, no. I'd rather eat a couple of jabs and right hands than these dudes throw me all over the place, man.
Absolutely the truth. And you know this is you're gonna find this hard to believe back when Greg was hurt, there was a doctor that was frequently used named Dr. Wheeler. And they questioned Dr. Wheeler after Greg got hurt, and he had never examined Greg, but he said, I think the regulations in Kentucky are too strict anyway. So there were some fights about, I don't know, 6 or 8 months later, and I went to the fight, and Dr. Wheeler was the actual doctor at the fights. I already had a grudge against him, but I went to the fights, and one of the guys that was fighting absolutely got knocked stone cold, and I watched the doctor flip him over without supporting his neck, without supporting his head. He just flipped him over. So that was strike one. So then the next bout that happened, the guys headbutted each other. Oh. He used the same piece of gauze to clean off both guys' heads.
Oh, you can't do that.
I found him after the fights And I said, I don't know what kind of doctor you think you are, but I guarantee you, you will never be a doctor, you will never be a ringside physician in the state of Kentucky as long as I live in Kentucky. And he never has.
He never has. Oh, my Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to go. I have an early meeting tomorrow. I wish everybody a good night, and I wish everybody the best.
Harold, any final thoughts or words before you go?
Oh, I wish
that.
You know,
yeah, Harold, you didn't bring me a piece of your birthday cake. What's wrong with you, man?
Harold, really quick before you leave.
That's just wrong. That's just wrong right there.
That's right. It was wrong. No birthday cake from Harold. Come on.
I was drinking so much champagne and stuff. I didn't get a taste of this cake myself.
Now that's really wrong. Happy birthday anyway.
Y'all
happy birthday, man.
Take care, Harold. See you next week.
Bye bye.
Take care, Harold.
Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Network. The show. We're in the last 20 minutes of Sports and Death with the mic on, lights off. The panel is still here, and the lovely Patty Page is bringing us a special edition as we dedicate this show to her husband, one of four heavyweight champions out of Louisville, Kentucky, Greg Page, and the memory of Ms. Helen Hart, mother of our main basketball maven, the Hoopster. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, she's all yours. Part two, as we continue talking, learning, and enjoying the company of the lovely Patty Page.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's really been wonderful. It's been an honor to be on the show. I would just advocate anybody who has any desire to bombard, go on the internet and give the address for the Boxing Writers Association of America and the International Boxing Hall of Fame and bombard them with letters. I mean, that's what I intend to do. Phone calls, letters. I'm just going to badger them until they do what they need to do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Ms. Page, can you tell us,
you had an invitation to speak before some type of congressional committee on the hazards and what have you of boxing and the trauma on the families and loved ones. Would you speak before them? If you had such an invitation?
Absolutely would. I've never been given that invitation, but I absolutely would.
Mm. Well, I want to ask Ms. Page a question, panel. Ms. Page, are you going to be at the International Boxing Hall of Fame this year on June 6th, from June 6th to the 10th?
I will not. I cannot afford to be there right now.
I lost my
job on March the 1st, and I can't afford to be there.
Oh, okay. All right.
I would love to be there because, in my opinion, and I can say this, and if Sylvester Stallone had the ball, he would say, I don't deserve this honor. I shouldn't be here.
Mm. Yeah, I was kind of shocked by that.
And we all know with his ego that's not going to happen.
Right.
But I honestly think that he should have declined the invitation.
And not only that, Mrs. Page, but imagine how Joe Frazier feels. Here I was, a real champion many times over, fighting the Ali's of the world, and I got a statue of this guy up in Philadelphia, my home state.
I know. And it's there are so many people that should be there that are not, and it's just not. I just don't understand. I know it's political. I know the biggest part of it's political, and I'm just one that tells the truth. I tell it from my heart. I've given many speeches, and I've never written a speech. I just tell it from my heart. Because that's where the truth comes from,
Ms. Page,
and I do it in Greg's honor, and I do it because I watched him suffer, and I do it because I promised him that I would.
Ms. Page, can I ask you a question? You was on the panel. Who you vote for the Boxing Hall of Fame? You was on the panel.
Ooh, that'd be a tough one. If I was on the panel.
First of all, do you agree with the people that are going in now? I mean, because you got Kasha Zhu, Mike Tyson.
Kasha Zhu's a mystery.
You know,
why is he going in there?
You know, we'll see. I think it was Kasha Zhu, Julio Cesar Chavez, Joe Cortez.
Chavez, I think, should be there. I think that's okay.
Okay.
Mike Tyson.
I'm not sure.
Mike Tyson, of course.
Yeah,
Mike Tyson. You know, I even have a little bit of reservation about Mike Tyson, but you can't take away from his personal life what he did in the boxing ring. He was a beast.
Right.
You know, and he loves pigeons. I mean, you know, I don't understand that whole concept, but he loves pigeons. Anyway,
you know,
I don't understand why Joe Frazier's not there. I don't understand that at all.
Okay.
It's just amazing to me. Like I said, I think it's political, and I don't know how to get beyond it other than do what I do, and that's I'll bombard them with letters, and I'll ask all Greg's fans, and I'm on Facebook, and I'll ask everybody on there. You know, that's the only thing I know to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we still want you to go out there and push to get write a novel, a book about it, about everything. Everybody can read about it. Everybody know what's going on.
Yeah, your story is very, very compelling, Mr.
Very good,
and,
very compelling. Unreal.
Yeah, spellbound.
It was unreal.
You should push
that book. I'll be the first to find it.
I started jotting down notes. Like, fellas, I'm getting there.
I say you do a movie like Mickey Ward did.
Right, yeah.
I say you do a movie like Mickey Ward did and get it out there so people know what's going on.
Right.
That was a good movie. You know, I do think that there was a lot more attention after Greg got hurt to boxer safety. I do think there's still a lot of corruption and a lot of negativity about the sport. The sport is nothing like it used to be back in the 80s when all the guys were fighting. I don't see anybody in the heavyweight division that impresses me. The Klitschko's bore me to death. they absolutely bore me to tears. You know, there just really aren't a whole lot of fighters out there that I'm all that impressed with. I love B-Hop. I think he's a good fighter. Sometimes I think he waits too long to get started. I think he sits back and watches his opponent for too many rounds, and sometimes that's hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
I love Sugar Shane Mosley, but yeah. Sugar Shane's speech concerns me. The slowness of his speech concerns me.
Okay.
And I know probably half of America is going to be on my Facebook tomorrow bashing me, but I don't like Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Wow.
I wish somebody would shut his mouth up. I am so sick of hearing him. And when he sat there at the conference before he fought Sugar Shane and told Shane, when you lose this fight, you can come work for me. You can shine my shoes.
Yeah,
that is arrogance at its
absolute
worst.
He's very insulting.
A lot of people don't like Zab Judah. Zab Judah's been a perfect gentleman to me, and he was a perfect gentleman to Greg. I don't care for Roger Mayweather's antics a lot. Layla Ali is a wonderful lady. I've met her. She's great.
I'll never forgive myself if in closing I don't ask you. But when you do meet the other fighters, you know, and the trainers, you know, the people who are intimately involved in boxing, do they generally show you love, knowing, you know, who your husband was and who you are? Do you generally get love from the people involved in boxing?
I generally get love and respect from the people in boxing. Because most people know, because like I said, I lived a very private story in a very public manner. Stories as far as Europe and Australia and Las Vegas, where Greg lived for many years. I mean, they all wrote about it. The Courier Journal about 4 years ago, did a 16-page spread about the Greg Page story from beginning to end. That was something they had never done before. That was the local newspaper here, something they had never done before. So people genuinely give me love and respect because I didn't have to stay.
But you earned it.
Go.
Respect and love, people don't give you, you earn it. So it's no question. Listening to you these 2 hours and knowing of you, your record stands for itself. So, I mean, respect, love, something that you earned, and you're a first class lady. You mentioned some, and your knowledge of, you mentioned Zab Judah. Zab Judah is the one fight on the right night. Zab Judah can beat anybody in that ring. Yeah, I mean,
oh,
Zab Judah.
Absolutely. Super Judah. He's the man.
Yeah, Super Judah.
And he's a nice guy.
Yeah,
and you know, he genuinely, he came to Louisville A local guy was putting on a fight here, and he knew Zab. He was from Brooklyn, and he brought Zab down here, and Zab was very gracious to Greg. And the way they way people treated Greg was how I approached them.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but you know, I know that and you speaking about Zab Judah, I've met him on several occasions, and I went to a boxing. Just to add to what you're saying, I was at Madison Square Garden one day, and I was with my mother, who we were there to see a fight, and he didn't even know who I was. And he was so gracious and so kind. My mother said, "Oh my God, look, it's Zab Judah." Do you believe he actually stopped? And when I said to him, "Would you be kind enough to take a photo with my mother?" He actually stopped, didn't know who I was, says, "Of course." And not only took one picture, but took three pictures, one with myself as well. So the guy is a gentleman. And just to add to what you're saying,
that is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I was watching a fight, and I believe he was fighting Corey Spinks. And just to add to what you're saying, he knew in the ring he was fighting Corey Spinks at one time. I don't know if the panel remembers the fight.
I remember that fight.
He actually looked at the referee and was like, "I'm going to kill this guy. Can you stop the fight? I'm going to end up killing this guy." And I believe it was the first or second fight he had with him. And he said, "I'm going to end up killing this guy." So as far as I'm concerned, at times I see he's a gentleman and also a sportsman. You know what I mean? I definitely have nothing negative to say about Zab Judah.
He definitely is a class act in the sport. A gentleman who Lennox Lewis is a class act.
Absolutely.
He's been very generous to me, as far as gracious and kind and considerate to me. There's another heavyweight who is still out there fighting who should have quit a long time ago that
I
won't name.
I didn't say that name.
However, I will say that the night of the opening of the Greg, they opened the Ali Center here in 2005, and they opened it they rushed it in a hurry because Ali was getting worse, and Greg was not on the guest list for the fight. For the opening. Well, I'm offended, obviously, so I call a friend of mine who's a reporter and said, "How absolutely ridiculous is this? They're going to have this in this town and not invite Greg." So Greg went. Well, as we're going through there, he's looking around, you know, and he's seeing people that he recognizes. He said, "There's Evander." Well, he was sitting at a table, and he just smiled and waved, and he said, Greg said, "I'd like to get a picture with Evander." So I said, "Greg would like a picture with you." And he just sat there, and I said, "He can't come to you. He's in a wheelchair. Could you come over here?" So he's like, whatever. So he came over and took a picture, right? He came over and took a picture. Wow. So the next time I saw him was at the Tyson fight, and he was on one side of the arena, and I was on the other. And I have a daughter who's as feisty as I am. She's just turning 30 this year. And I said, Greg said, "They tell me that Evander's on the other side of the ring. I'd like to see him." And, you know, Greg, it's really difficult to manipulate a wheelchair, and it was crowded. So my daughter went and said to Evander, "Greg Page is in the house. He's across the ring over there, and he would like to see you." He said, "I'm on my way." And he got up and came around over there. So I guess he learned that lesson. Give Greg respect. You're going to give Greg respect, so you may as well go ahead and do it.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
You know.
Wow.
And he can't get up and walk to you, so you may as well. And what does it hurt, you know? And the funny thing, and then the other thing about Evander is in 2002, we had a fundraiser here to try to raise money to help pay some of his medical bills because he didn't have any insurance. Mm-hmm. And we sent a letter to Evander's camp. He was training for a fight at that time, but they sent a letter back saying he's training for a fight. He's too busy to autograph any memorabilia to send to you, but it was signed by Evander Holyfield.
Wow. Wow.
And it was his signature.
Wow, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's why I said these athletes that don't give back,
right?
I really have a problem with it. I don't care what sport they're in. If they don't give
but
back,
you know, Ms. Page,
I don't have any respect for them.
Ms. Page, the other side of it is, too, is, you know, you get into too many fights, you're going to end up the same. You could end up the same way, too. You know what I mean? So why not, like, at the same time, like, contribute, you know? You never know. I mean, you know, it could happen to anybody. It could happen to anybody in the sport. You know what I mean?
Service to others is enriching faith based on
exactly.
That's the great line from Muhammad Ali. Life's most assistant, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And, hey, today, Easter, Palm Sunday, the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. I'm going to tell you something. You know, people talk about the personalities, you know, and I think you today validated something I've always said. You know, Mike Tyson is a hell of a human being. And you can see alone the type of reaction that Mike gave you as opposed to some other people.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, and you just can't, you know, this that heavyweight
and like I said, you know, Mike and Greg had an off and on relationship and not always was it pleasant. So I didn't know what to expect. But Mike was so gracious and so kind, and it was just absolutely amazing. I just was very, very impressed with him as a gentleman, and he was just Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke my heart to watch him get beat. It did. Mm-hmm. But that was, you know.
You know, the thing with Mike, too, Patty, is the people never – two things. They have looked at, you know, Mike has always maintained his innocence in that situation, and nobody ever talks about the fact that the guy lost 3 prime years. You know, whenever we talk about Ali, we always mention the years that he lost, but nobody hardly ever mentions the years that Mike Tyson lost.
Yeah,
and, if Mike was stayed focused and hadn't lost those years, but there's something that is ironic that nobody, when you talk about Mike Tyson, they never say, well, the guy lost 3 prime years. It's like, you know, he didn't do the 3 years, and that's something that I too think that's not been attributed to him. I think he was one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all times, great guy. But you know,
he was very, very, very brutal. I think Mike was taken advantage of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think after Cuz died, it was like free vultures on him. Mm-hmm. After his godmother died, it was like
a
vulture city on him, and people just bled him dry.
Well, I think it really turned bad for him too when Jim Jacobs died. I think Jacobs kind of continue the model syndrome, you know.
Yeah.
But once Jacob was gone, in the words of Marvin Gaye, it wasn't doggone, it was long gone, which you kind of just validate. Mike was just on his own, and a lot of things that happened to him. I mean, you look at the thing with his two friends as managers, and all of a sudden he missed $100 million. How do you miss $100 million?
I
can look around. I'm missing.
Disappear.
Yeah, and these guys are your managers, and you're blaming DK. But I think the downward spiral started and was rapidly a decline. It was once Jacobs died, because Jacobs kept, I mean, that's a big reason why Kevin Rooney stayed in the camp, because he was part of the Jacobs Customato syndrome. But then, the point that you made, as Rooney said, a point well taken, and Harold Weston said in touching, that once Jacobs was gone, we saw the last of Mike Tyson.
You're right, absolutely. You know, and now they're making a freak out of him, and he doesn't deserve that. You know, but he's doing whatever he can to make money. I understand that, but he doesn't get the respect that he deserves. He'll get the respect from me. He would get the respect from me because he was respectful to me, and you know. And it's really I got a lot of respect from Emmanuel Stewart, which I was not expecting. It's just amazing. Larry Holmes has always been respectful to me.
He
said, "Baby, I'm just gonna tell you the truth. It wasn't about I was scared to fight Greg Page." He said, "It was about the money. DK's gonna pay me $1 million to fight here, $5 million to fight there." Was no hard deal for me to make, you know. And you got to give Larry Holmes credit. He came through all that, and he still got money.
Yeah,
he bought all of Eastern Pennsylvania.
That's a good point. That's a good point right there, Ms. Page.
And
he went through all that, and he still has money.
And he told me, he said, you know, I try to talk to these young guys and say, look, you know, Don King or Bob Arum, those guys ain't got your best interests at heart. You got to look after you yourself.
Yeah, they didn't listen to me. You
got
to go for something. And Larry told me, I did a two-part series on, went down to Langston an incident, and Larry told me, he said, you know what, he made the financial, he said, I could live up $10,000 or $20,000. I just had to make the adjustments, and you look at Larry, he's one of the few guys, as you mentioned, Patty, that solve it. You know, when you talk about guys that have money, and you look at Evander, the kind of money that he's ran through, and the kind of money that Mike's ran through. And that was one of the things that I think they said DK used to tell Mike. Mike, you know, you got to do something with your money. You know, you just can't keep buying that. Because when I worked with DK, Eric Brown told me that Mike was like Elvis Presley. You know, Mike would walk into a place and buy two or three BMWs. If you want one, you got one too. You know what I mean?
He bought a lot of GDG, not far from each, Doc. Remember I told you that?
You know, and these guys don't think the longevity of their career is not very long if they really think about it.
They remind me, you know, Leroy Neiman, the greatest sports artist of all time, and he said, you know,
love Leroy's pictures, love them.
Leroy's, but you know, Leroy lost a leg the early part of this year.
I would love for him to do a Greg Page picture. I would. I would really love that.
Well, no, maybe we'll sit down and get that conversation going. And he the line that he's when you talked about athletes and their lifestyle. He said he was around Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra. And he said, Mel, those guys act like they were going to live forever. And it's the mind of the athletes.
And athletes are the same way. And unfortunately, boxers are the worst.
Mm.
But that's because they don't have any oversight and a pension plan or health care or any of those things. And you know, when you got an entourage and you got, you know, you got to have a manager and you got to have a trainer and all that kind of stuff, but they're all making money off of you.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they just want you to keep fighting.
Oh, yeah. No, hey, don't worry about it. Hey, you got him, champ. You know I'm with you. Hey, can I hold another 2,000?
Right. That's right. There you go.
Let's
go to the club and make it rain.
Yeah,
boy said about Bill Clancy.
he was a rare. Once again, we're going to the closing seconds of Sports in Depth, a special edition. The lovely Patty Page was with us, as well as the always lovely Lady A. Mel Smith, Jr., little Coco, WFS star, Rumney's in the house, the Steno Baby, it was Harold Weston Jr., and the Hoopster. And once again, we our sympathy to you, Hoopster, as we dedicate the show also to your lovely mother, the late Mrs. Helen Hart. Big C, questions? Thoughts real quickly before we close?
Yeah, I got a question, Doc.
Good one. I mean, go ahead. Oops.
Is Miss Page, you ever make a movie about Greg? Who you get to play the part of Greg?
You know, I've been asked that a couple times. My personal favorite would be LL Cool J, but, you know, I would have to kind of try him out first. that's just a joke.
Listen, you're not getting anything from me. Trust me, I agree with you 100%.
Man, did LL Cool J grow up fine or what? I thought Lawrence Fishburne could do it.
Yeah,
I could see Lawrence Fishburne doing it, and I absolutely insist that Julia Roberts play me. And I don't know if you've ever seen the guy that Greg fought, but the guy Greg fought looks like he could be a double for Vin Diesel.
Wow.
So hey, I just wanna do a test run with LL Cool J, but yeah, probably Lawrence Fishburne could be if Will Smith can pull off being Muhammad Ali, Lawrence Fishburne could pull off being Greg Page.
Whoa,
Big C, you got anything there for us?
Wow.
Me, no, I'm just enjoying this, and, you know, a lot of respect to the panel with their insights, and, you know, Ms. Page, you know, thank you again for all your efforts, and, you know, just the education that I'm personally receiving just from hearing. So thank you all.
Okay, Big C.
I'm absolutely honored that you all would give Greg and I the time to tell his story, because that's the only way we're going to make a difference is to keep telling the story and keep insisting that something happened.
Well, what we're going to do now, this show we usually run them, but Big C, we're going to put a CD together, this particular show, for you, and we'll get that out to you. We'll mail it out to you. So that will be our gift to you for joining us and giving us a unique show. So, Big C, we'll be able to do that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we'll do that. I got your numbers. We're going to start. Thank my man Steven Stein for way back a few weeks ago calling and suggesting you. Thank you for being with us. And what we're going to do, Larry closes out, and then Destino, you will say good night. Big C, Larry Hardesty, please.
Absolutely.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And Big C, without further ado, Mr. John Coltrane, please. Dear Lord, a simple, a heartfelt thank you. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, Dusty, tell everybody good night.
Thank you very much, good. And Lady Paige, it's an honor, and we are better people today for you sharing Greg Paige with us. And we saw him on television, and we saw his great fights, but to have the in-depth conversation with you was better and better. Thank you very much, and God bless you. And let's keep it
going. And may the wonderful Greg Paige rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And understand, Patty, hey, the door here is always open to you, lady.
Absolutely.
All righty, sir. I thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Take care and thank you.
God
That's
bless
me.
You. Have a good night.
Thank you, now.
Nice meeting you, Paige.
All right. Bye-bye.
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 Okay, gang. Thanks a million.
Okay.
Pleasure,
pal. All right. See you guys next week.
Dusty,
okay,
lady. Hey. See you. Pleasure.
Right.
All right. Bye.
Okay. I'll give Mary Ramirez your regards. Okay.
Take it easy now.
Hey, okay. Lady, hey, did you hear about the Mary Ramirez stuff?
Listen, I'm done with him. I had no more.
Hey, listen, you know what? Hey, listen, he had the nerve the other day to call me and say, "Hey, Barry, you're guilty."
Hey, you didn't happen to read the paper today, right? On the whole thing, on the New York Post.
Oh my Lord!
No.
Yeah, Barry Bonds. People don't know this, or they forget that he was the first 400 home run and 435 bases stolen.
Oh,
and they're talking about 40-40.
He's the only guy with over 400 home runs and 400 stolen bases.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think he was shooting for 500. In fact, in the whole history of baseball, only three guys have hit over 400 home runs and stole over 300 bases. The first one was Willie Mays. The second one who got inducted last year in the Hall of Fame, Andre Dawson. Barry Bonds, I don't know if he got 500 stolen bases, but he's the only guy with over 400 home runs and 400 stolen bases.
You know what did him into that he had said to a circle of friends in Ken Griffey's house? He says, well, these mediocre ball players are taking the juice and making money. Well, I'm 34, so I'm going to do the same thing, whether he did it or not. And this is a direct quote. That, you know, and I'm saying, wow, if he didn't do that, you know, and he did himself some harm himself.
Well, also the girlfriend, you know what I mean?
The girlfriend, you know, and then he says, Barry Bonds was already Hall of Fame credentials before the freaking...
Way before it, Dusty and Doc.
Way
he was a Hall of Famer before there were any rumors about juice. And number two, the government spent $5 million of my money for this?
Exactly, exactly. Exactly.
They
but
got
they
nobody
got
now because we all broke. The economy's horrible.
Yeah.
Lady A is her
own. Nobody.
We all broke now. There's no economy.
Who's going to call you back in 5 minutes?
Okay.
Have a good night.
Take care.
Good night,
okay,
everybody. Bye.
Okay, gang.
Take care.
Bye-bye. 10-4. Thanks, Dusty.